Let me take this opportunity to welcome you all to this portfolio committee meeting. Before we get to the agenda of the day, I want to acknowledge the apologies that we have received. We have received an apology from Honorable Sibisi, Honorable Tsedekulu, and Honorable Schreiber. Those are the three apologies we have received. I don't know from Mastrole if there are any other apologies that I have missed.
Yes, sir. There's just one from the minister who's not able to be in the meeting today. But we have the DM with us, sir.
Which minister? Which
minister?
Yeah, say so. Yes, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. As I have already opened, I don't want to waste any time. I must also welcome the Auditor General because he is part of this meeting. And without any further waste of time, I hand over to the Auditor General to brief the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much for the opportunity. I just want to share the presentation quickly. If you can just let me know when it is on the screen.
It's coming up. I can see it is coming up on the screen.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much indeed for the opportunity to brief the committee this morning. We're joined today also by our colleagues from Statistics South Africa and Brand South Africa. I'm Ilse Slaver. I'm the senior manager responsible for the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. We're joined by the Deputy Business Executive Sangeeta Cullen, as well as the senior manager, Mr. Sabiso Matladi for Statistics South Africa, and then Mr. Nkanyiso Yama for Brand South Africa. So, Chair, we've got the message that we should be quick. So without further ado, then let me take you through the presentation this morning. As you can see on our reputation promise, today we're actually fulfilling a critical role in terms of our reputation promise, which is that we enable oversight. So we hope that we will leave you this morning with a message that you can take forward and that you can focus on for the upcoming year in areas where there might still be concerns with regards to some of the entities that we are dealing with this morning. The role of the AGMSA in the reporting process, I think we're all quite aware of what our role is and why we are here this morning, so I am not going to go through that in detail. So let us then start with the 2019-20 audit outcomes, which was recently finalized. Our annual audit, as you're well aware of, examines three areas, which is our financial statements, then the performance reporting, which is reliable and credible performance reporting, whether that has been achieved, as well as compliance with key laws and regulations. I'm not going to go into too much of detail with regards to the different audit opinions. This morning, we will basically be dealing with unqualified audit opinions, then with or without findings, as you will see in our following slides. With regards to the legends that are being used in our presentation, that is also most probably familiar to you by this point in time, which is the different colors, which indicates the different types of audit opinions. Importantly to note is the green unqualified with no findings, which is our most desirable audit outcome, which we wish for all to achieve, and then the unqualified with findings, which is audit outcomes where there are certain issues still with compliance with laws and regulations and or performance information. then the arrow self-explanatory, whether there was improvement, unchanged, or regress. I'm not going to deal in detail with the accountability cycle. I think this has been discussed with the committee before, but this basically just shows us the intricate elements that all need to be complied with in order then to ensure accountability. With regards to the audit outcomes that we are projecting at the moment, this basically gives us a five-year overview of the various audit outcomes. Today, we are dealing in our presentation with the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, Statistics South Africa, and the Brand South Africa Trust. So for the first 2 years of this five-year cycle, we can see there that all of these three audits were actually unqualified with no findings, which to me is an indication that, you know, it is achievable. Unfortunately, then things started going not so well for Stats SA and Brand SA. So for the current year, you'll note that while Brand SA had an improvement in audit outcome, if you see this purple year, they were actually qualified last year as a result of payables from exchange transactions that they weren't managing to present fairly. However, Statistics South Africa have actually regressed from last year to this year. And the main reason for that being that with regards to procurement of commodities designed for local production and content did not in all instances stipulate the minimum thresholds for local production and content. And because that is actually a requirement of law for that to happen, we then reported material non-compliance in that regard. Brand South Africa, like I've mentioned, has managed to then resolve their audit qualification. However, they are also still struggling with certain areas where they are not managing compliance with all key laws and regulations. The Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation is obviously how we would like to see all departments and entities having had a five-year run of unqualified without any findings. And if you might recall correctly, it's actually in excess of 5 years. So we would like to commend the department in that regard. Then with regards to credible financial reporting, when we are doing our audit, we actually have a look at whether the financial statements that are submitted for auditing purposes complies with the accounting frameworks from the onset. So if you have a look here, what we are saying is that while Brand SA managed to then get an unqualified financial statement opinion, there actually were material adjustments to these financial statements as a result of the audit process. So there's still some deficiencies in the area of preparing those credible in-year reports to ensure that when you submit your financial statements at the end of the year, that those then comply with the accounting framework in all material respects. Whereas DPME and SAS SA, then we saw that when they submitted financial statements on the 31st of July, those financial statements were in all material respects accurate and complete. So well done on that. Then with regards to credible performance reporting, from a similar perspective, it must be noted that if you look at the bottom of the slide, in all three instances, eventually after the audit process, there were reliable and useful reporting on the performance information. So in other words, what you're seeing presented to you in the annual report is a fair reflection. But similar to what we've discussed previously with the financial statements, we found that in the instances of SAS SA and Brand SA, there had to be corrections to those reports before the audit was actually finalized, which then resulted in them receiving a favorable conclusion with no material findings. Compliance with legislation, you'll note that last year we actually had DPME and Stats is having no material findings on non-compliance, whereas this year Stats is, like I've mentioned, received that finding with regards to the local content in the procurement. So DPME has obviously remained without any material findings, and Brand SA still continue to struggle with some compliance areas. Then with regards to preventative controls, the AG has really had quite a focused approach lately to inform all our stakeholders, including the auditees and oversight, of the importance of preventative controls. Because of the fact that we're saying if your preventative controls are all in place and it's strong and the system is functioning, it actually is more beneficial in the long run, as when things get to a point where there's actually non-compliance, that then results in lengthy investigations, which in most instances also has a cost impact on the clients involved. Therefore, if you have a look at this next slide, I think we're all quite familiar with the area, so I'm not going to go into it in too much of detail, but if you would like to, you can also always refer back to this slide. If you look at this slide, it shows us the fundamentals of strong preventative controls in the different areas, which then talks to leadership, whether there's adequate or sufficient and sufficiently skilled officials, whether the policies and procedures are comprehensive, and then whether there are mechanisms, quite importantly, for officials to report any pressure or undue influence, an area where there should also be proper preventative controls for officials to actually report matters that are of concern. Then with regards to regular risk assessments, I think you'll notice later on in our slides that with Brand SA, for example, there wasn't a risk assessment at all during the year under review. So most then you can see how all these things actually link into each other. And then our combined assurance model, where we say that senior management, the internal audit function, as well as the audit committee, must be working towards the same goal. So with regards to our audit outcomes today, we would really like for you to also bear that in mind when we go through this, so that afterwards management and leadership of the respective entities can then be asked where these preventative controls and make a follow-up to see where it can be strengthened. Then with regards to the, like we're discussing on the internal controls, I'm just going to deal with areas where we found that there might be something lacking. As you can see here, for DPME, we didn't really have any concerns. Where with Brand South Africa, you can see in all the four areas of proper record keeping, daily and monthly controls, the reviewing and monitoring of compliance, as well as risk assessment, there are still concerns. And if you have a look at review and monitoring of compliance, we're actually saying here that some intervention is required at Brand SA. And we'll deal with the different compliance areas later on, where you will see exactly where those areas of different non-compliance is lying with that entity. Then proper record keeping and daily and monthly controls. This links into what we've discussed earlier with regards to the financial statements and the performance reports. Obviously, if your proper record keeping and daily and monthly controls are in place, that would then prevent those material adjustments that had to be made during the audit process, which I earlier referred to. As I've also noticed earlier, the risk management, Brand SA actually did not perform a risk assessment during the year under review. So the key drivers of internal control, here we just highlight which were the key areas where we found some deficiencies with regards to Stats SA and Brand SA. And I think I've already dealt with that in my previous slide, so I'm going to then move on to the assurance providers. As we've mentioned previously, assurance, in order for assurance to be provided, there's a number of different levels of assurance that should be provided. So from a first level perspective, and those are really the people that are directly involved in the process, is your senior management, the accounting officer authority, and then your executive authority. So you'll notice that in certain instances here, we said that only some assurance were provided, and that would be for the reasons that we've already highlighted earlier in the presentation. So for DPME, we're saying across the board at first level that all the assurance providers had the necessary effort and that we were happy with the assurance that were provided, and that was then reflected in the clean audit outcome. However, as a result of the non-compliance that were ultimately identified, as well as the material adjustments that had to be affected to the financial statements of Brand SA and the reporting reports, the performance reports of Stats SA and Brand SA, you then see that in certain areas we are saying that there is still a concern and that we're saying that they only provided some assurance. Then if you have a look at the second level of assurance, that would be where your more independent service providers come in, which is your internal audit unit and the audit committee. So with regards to internal audit, we did not identify any concerns per se from the internal audit function side, but it would be important for management of then, especially Brand SA, to notice where internal audit is issuing reports that those recommendations that are made by the internal audit unit actually are actions to ensure a an improved audit outcome. Then with regards to Brand SA, some concerns were still noted from the audit committee's oversight level, but we were happy with the oversight that was provided by DPME and SAS SA audit committee. With regards to financial health, for the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, we did not actually identify any specific concerns. However, on Brand SA, perhaps firstly, importantly, we should note that there were no specific going concern issues noted. So where you see there on top, we didn't identify any material uncertainties, which means that 100% of these audits will actually manage to exist for the foreseeable future from a financial health perspective. But for Brand SA, we noticed that the average invoice period was 46 days. Now, while that is an improvement to the 55 days that it took Brand SA to pay invoices in the past, we're saying that this is still not within the acceptable norm of 30 days. And this might lead to interest and penalties that might be incurred that will then result in fruitless and wasteful expenditures. So more attention should be paid by Brand SA to ensure that invoices are actually paid within the period of 30 days. Then with regards to Statistics South Africa, in the past couple of years, there was actually budget cuts on the compensation of employee cost budgets by the National Treasury. And unfortunately, the current staff complement of Statistics South Africa actually exceeds then their employee cost budget, which then resulted in unauthorized expenditure of 50.9 million rand that was reported in the 2019-20 financial year. And this has also resulted that the department, if you look at that, when we did the ratio analysis, there were some indications that the department might struggle going forward to pay their obligations as and when they fall due, their short-term obligations. But primarily the concern there being the fact that the employee cost budgets do not actually cover the existing staff members on the ground. Then if we move on to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, you can see on the slide here that there's actually been a decrease since last year. It went from 1.3 million to 0.8 million, which is about 800,000. And then we're saying here, except for an amount of 209,000 by the DPME that was incurred in the current year, but relates to prior years, the bulk of this amount was actually expenditure or related to incidents that occurred in the 1920 financial period. Then we're saying here that Statistics South Africa was responsible for the major portion of this to the value of an amount of 515,000. And the majority of this amount related then to interest paid. DPME was the next one in the ratio, which contributed to about 35% of the total amount, and that was as a result of various instances, but mainly relating to no-show cancellation fees, also some damages to rental vehicles for those type of incidents. And then Brand SA had a minimal amount which resulted from booking services that were cancelled. Also quite heartening, where we saw that last year Brand SA did not investigate some of their fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This year, we found that all three of the entities actually investigated the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was incurred in 2018-19. Then moving on to irregular expenditure. So whereas the fruitless and wasteful expenditure actually decreased, the irregular expenditure increased over the 2 years. And the main contributor of that is actually also Statistics South Africa, which contributed about 98% of their regular expenditure. And the main reason for that being that they had procured certain fleet vehicles on a contract that had already expired at that point in time. Then with regards to supply chain management, so in the area of non-compliance, we'll note that supply chain management forms the bulk of the instances of non-compliance, which are then listed in the slide. And as we've noted before, the Statistics South Africa last year did not have any findings in this area, whereas this year we had this incident where the bid documentation does not stipulate the minimum threshold for local production and content. However, the bulk of the findings related to Brand SA. So the various areas in which we found that Brand SA then did not comply with prescribed laws and regulations with regard to supply chain management was that we identified instances of procurement without competitive bidding, that extensions or modifications to contracts were not in all instances approved by appropriately delegated officials. Contracts were awarded based on preference points that were not in all instances allocated in terms of the requirements of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. And then lastly, a contract was awarded to a bidder on functionality criteria that was not stipulated in the original invitation. So as we can see here, there's still quite a bit of work to be done by Brand SA when it comes to making sure that the monitoring of the compliance to these type of supply chain laws and regulations are improved and enhanced so that these matters can be eliminated going forward. Then just a portfolio snapshot of the matters that we've discussed already. I don't think I'm going to go into it in detail. What is a bit concerning, though, is if you look at the arrows on this slide, you'll notice that in most areas we actually do have a regression, which would be the clean audit, the findings on compliance with legislation, and then irregular expenditure. Then with regards to root causes, in most instances, we identified with Brand SA that there was then a slow or not a proper response to improving key controls in relation to addressing risk areas. Then the recommendations, I think we've dealt with it throughout the presentation, but what we are recommending is that with regards to Statistics South Africa, we found through the audit process that there was a bit of a misunderstanding by the officials from Statistics South Africa in terms of how that local content requirements should have been applied. So we are recommending that they then take up the discussion on a regular basis with the National Treasury where there are any instances where perhaps the interpretation misunderstandings between what Treasury intended and what officials of Statistics South Africa then interpreted to be what they needed to do. So that would be important for Statistics South Africa. Then with regards to Brand SA, we've noted throughout the presentation the different areas, but just in brief, they need to ensure that their monitoring and their credibility of the in-year financial and performance reporting will be improved to make sure that the financial statements and performance reports are then credibly presented at year-end. This is also important because this forms part of the in-year monitoring of all the oversight mechanisms. So in other words, if your in-year reports are not accurate, that might also not give a full picture to those charged with governance and oversight bodies throughout the year, so to enable them to take any corrective action where such should be necessary or might be necessary. Then also the enhancement of monitoring of compliance to all procurement and contract management related laws and regulations. And then lastly, we did identify during Brand SA's audit that there were certain instances of non-compliance where it actually amounted to improper conduct in the supply chain management system that should have been reported to the South African Police Service, and it was not. So we're saying in a nutshell that these items should be then covered in the action plan by Brand SA, and then to the portfolio committee itself, we're just recommending that they then follow up with leadership of these respective entities in terms of those action plans and how they are addressing the matters that we've noted above. Chair, I'm not going to then dwell any further. I think we've made our presentation in terms of the various matters that the portfolio committee should take care of or should have oversight of in the upcoming year. And I wish to thank you for allowing us to make this presentation, and we will take any questions. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, now the report or presentation is now open for discussion. Can I see, by show of hands, those who want to speak on this presentation?
Chair Mandul. Chair.
Chair Mandul. Motupe? Chairperson Motupe?
Give it, Chair. Where is the chair?
I don't know. No, he's writing.
My hand is up, Chair, on the platform.
Ms. Lesoma.
Platform. Raise hands on the platform, honorable members. I can
we
see
did
all
so.
Of you.
We
did
that.
So.
Chairperson.
We did so.
We did so.
Honorable Chair.
Don't
Mantu
call
is...
me. Raise your hands on the platform. I will note all of you.
Oh, we didn't hear your response in terms of showing hands on the platform. Sorry for that.
Let me give Honorable Ntuli. Honorable Ntuli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for shouting, Chairperson. We know that these IT things sometimes are not always with us. Chair and the meeting, I would love to firstly to welcome the presentation. And we really applaud the department for the overall performance under such difficult times of COVID-19. Having said that, Chair, I would also love to check that the impact of COVID-19 in general, in terms of monitoring the entire government, are there any loopholes so far? If so, what are the turnaround strategies in dealing directly with such? Remember, the monitoring is for the entire government. So we are just, one is just checking as to how the department is stretching its monitoring. Two, how far is the process of financial disclosure by government officials, including disciplinary measures for those who are failing such undertakings. So that Chairperson and the meeting, we have the officials, the government officials, that are purely officials, other than being officials and on the other hand wearing other caps. In terms of wasteful expenditure, Chair, in the meeting, that one is a big no. I wanted also to check as to what plans does the department have in place to totally do away with it. And lastly, Chair, the Integrated Planning Development Framework Bill, for me, is due like yesterday. Now, the question, when is it seeing the light of the day and do away with forever pipelining? With understanding, Chairperson, that we had those disruptions of COVID-19, so to say for us to work on good background, this bill is due like yesterday. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Malatsi.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not gonna put my video on just to make sure my connection is stable. I mean, I will limit my input to the presentation on the AG's report. And I do note that, you know, they made some complimentary remarks in terms of the progress that has been done from a compliance perspective by both, you know, Brand SA and Stats SA. But there are two transactions or two issues related to irregular expenditure that caught my eye. in the presentation. And I'd just like, you know, for them to elaborate more in terms of their engagements with the department on this, because earlier in the presentation, there's also a reference being made to the lack of speedy responses, particularly from Brand SA, with regards to, you know, the submission of information and responses to questions asked. So the first question is regarding the 98% of the 75.5 million irregular expenditure related to the contract for fleet vehicles for State SA, and the 7.3 million in relation to Brand SA, which was related to appointment of service providers without the proper authorization by an appropriately delegated official. And to just check whether in, you know, once that has been done and identified the staff, in the engagements that they've had with the department, is there any indication of some sort of processes that both entities have initiated, one in terms of holding the officials that were responsible for this, you know, accountable as is required in terms of, you know, possible disciplinary action processes that may be taken? And secondly, in terms of, you know, the corrective measures with regards to these transactions, or whether, you know, that's done and there's nothing more that can be done with regards to the value of those transactions rather than the individual concerns. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Soma.
Thank you very much, Chair. Equally, I would also appeal to colleagues that I won't put my video because of the connectivity. That's one. Good morning, colleagues. And thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and also to the AG to present the encouraging report. But also, I think the most one, that important one that I'll take home is the role of the Portfolio Committee in terms of the outstanding matters or findings that the AG have raised, which I'm sure as we are going to engage after this immediately with the department, they have to give us the responses on that. But secondly, Chair, the other point that I would like to raise is that I totally agree with the notion that says that while in terms of the picture and the report the AG have presented in terms of KPME, we must, as a portfolio committee, ensure that what they are able to achieve, it also goes to other departments, because their role is to monitor and evaluate and assess the departments so that we can establish what are the blocknecks that they discover when they engage with the departments. The other one, Chair, I think the other one also, which is a comment from me for Brand SA in particular, is the one that the AG says that in terms of their compliance and supply chain, is the importance of the board also. We must start to have a relationship with the board so that we may, because they are the middle persons between us, the executive and parliament. And we must at one stage also make sure that the board start appreciating and have a sense of comfort where we are seated, that they do appreciate that. And I'm sure they will, when they present, also talk to moving forward. Having had the late, may his soul rest in peace, the late AG, in terms of where his report, in terms of time following money, so to speak, that they are able also then to give us a sense of comfort that 2021 audit report will be far better than this. But other than that, we really appreciate the opportunity to have a first-hand information from the AG before we engage with the department. The rest, Chair, I'll ask directly to the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kibi. Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, I also want to welcome, or good morning, Honorable members and colleagues. Honorable Chair, I just want to welcome the report by the department, and I think the questions that I wanted to ask are already covered by my colleagues, all of them. But I just want to welcome the report. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kibi. Can I now allow the AG's office to respond to questions asked?
Honorable Chairperson.
I said members must raise hands on the platform.
I did. What happened? Even here on my screen, hands, it says thumb up, but I don't know what is happening.
It is not showing on my side, but you can speak.
Yeah, then I'm going to have a problem when I want to ask questions, because here it says thumb up, but the chairperson does not see it.
No, but raise hand. It will show your hand on my side.
It does. Here to my screen, it shows thumb up, two hands here.
It is not there, but you can ask your question.
Okay, thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. I would like also to welcome the presentation of the AG. And then I've got only two questions to AG, which is, according to the AG's report, saying that there were two entities which they were supposed to make corrections. So I would like to know which corrections must be made within these two entities, the STATS SA and the Brand SA. And the other one is, which oversight areas did the Brand SA not reach specifically? Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Over to the AG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think let me quickly answer some of the questions, and then I will hand over to my colleagues from Stats SA and Brand SA to also just highlight certain matters from their perspective, having been the actual auditors of those two entities. So with regards to the Honourable Ntuli's questions, I think those are questions that might be better answered by the department themselves. But just in terms of the Auditor General's contribution, in terms of the loopholes then that were created by COVID-19, I think, Honourable Chairperson, you would be aware that the Auditor General was asked by the President of the country to actually do COVID real-time audits. I think it's something that you must have heard of by now, that we've already tabled our first special report. From our side, I think it's quite a large contribution to then identify areas where there are current risks in the environment so that those could be addressed immediately instead of then doing an audit after the fact. So from that perspective, that is what we are doing. We are also, in terms of our audits, we have performed some procurement testing with regards to, for example, PPE, you know, the masks and sanitizers and so forth that were purchased after the 2019-20 year end, and already then communicated certain discrepancies, not in this instance, but with some of our other auditees with the leadership of those entities. Then obviously we're also providing ongoing feedback to Parliament in terms of the results of that real-time audit when it gets tabled. Then with regards to the financial disclosure of government officials, we haven't necessarily been a part of that process ourselves. However, what we do as part of our ordinary audit process is that we do then identify potential conflicts of interest, which is reported then to the respective auditees that we audit. So from that perspective, we are also assisting in notifying leadership then of the respective departments and entities where we do then identify those any potential conflict of interest through our audit process that will enable them to also follow up in instances where financial disclosures might not have been made. Then with regards to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I think the question more related to what are the departments and the entities doing or intending to do to then eliminate the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which I'm sure they will answer when they then make their presentation. However, from our side, we do then, like we say, give specific recommendations to the departments and entities as to how to also eliminate that fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This is ordinarily also followed up during our different meetings that we have during the year with those charged with governance inside the entities to determine their progress in eliminating those areas. Then with regards to the irregular expenditure, the specifics on Statistics South Africa and Brand South Africa, I will then hand over to my colleagues I think perhaps from our way, this might be better for them to then take the following questions or the remaining questions on Statistics South Africa and Brand South Africa. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Who is going to speak first?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My name is Tabiso Masaji, the Senior Manager on Statistics SA. The Honourable Member Malachi asked us to elaborate on the issue of irregular expenditure. So the issue of irregular expenditure at SA...
Chairperson, may I just raise something for in terms of processes? Please, thank you. If I may, my apology. I'm really sorry. I wouldn't have used the word of point of order because it's not out of order. But to say that probably it might be advisable, Chair, that the SA, when they respond, they are still going to present, but they note the questions that they are directly and Brand SA supposed to respond to so that we can engage on that one because they're still going to make a presentation. Otherwise, it's going to be a little bit clumsy because they... Here, I thought we were supposed to ask point of clarity, and those questions, of course, would be attempted also to ask other questions, but they must be parked until the department or the entity makes a presentation, then they can take up those questions. Otherwise, would be some of us would not necessarily be able to follow the presentation when they make the presentation. My apology, Chair. Thank you very much.
I don't think so, Honorable Swam. You will be able to ask questions to the MDPs after their presentation. If the Auditor General says some of the questions asked can be better answered by the MDPs, I think let's allow, because those questions are already asked, let's allow them to respond.
Agreed, Chair. Thank you very much. Thanks so much. Agreed, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, I was just trying to elaborate on the issue of irregular expenditure at Stats SA. This relates to a transversal contract for fleet management. So what happened is that this is an old contract that has been extended over the years, and eventually last year in February 2019, then National Treasury said there will not be any extensions anymore on that contract. So obviously the business of Stats that there uses a lot of fleet. Then at the end of the contract, they didn't have any existing contract that they needed to use for them to continue with their operation. So they went ahead and procured services on that contract, even though it had already expired. So a lot of discussions were had with the department, and they're still following up with National Treasury as well. And from our side as well, when we start with the audit process for 2021, we'll engage further with the department. And I'm sure when they do the presentation now, they will clarify further and give more detail on that contract. And then in terms of the changes, just to speak on that, as a Honorable Motsepe asked what changes the department had to make. When we auditing PDOs, I think the only issue on that the department had to change is on audit of performance information. So what we look at the usefulness of information that is being presented. So we look at what you planned at the beginning of the year and what are you actually reporting on at the end. So we look at the targets, your indicators that you planned in your annual performance plan, and what targets you have in the annual performance report, and we compare if there is consistency between what you planned and what you are actually reporting at the end. So we identified instances where some targets or some indicators were not necessarily the same as they were planned in the annual performance plan. Hence, then we had to raise a finding, then management subsequently went back and corrected that. So subsequent to that, we actually had a debrief with management, and the commitment was made that those issues will not find again in the audit of 2021. So we will monitor that in the coming audit. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Back to you, Chair.
Is there anyone now left out in terms of answering questions?
Honourable Chair, I think we will give an opportunity also to our colleague, Mr. Jama from Brand SA, to just also highlight to us what were the areas of material adjustments, and then with regards to the irregular expenditure to just give the details in terms of those appointments. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you. Take the platform, please.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nkanyiso Jama. I was speaking on the audit of Brand SA. So starting with the changes that were made on the financial statements, so there were adjustments on the performance information. This related to the targets that were not consistent with the plan. So we noted that in the annual report, there were targets that were not consistent with the plan, and we asked management to correct that. And also on the disclosure of commitments in the financial statements, so there were misstatements there, looking at the supporting evidence and what was disclosed in the financial statements, and management needed to make those corrections. And with regard to the irregular expenditure, so what we have noted in the current year are issues related to the extensions or modifications of existing contracts. So there were certain instances where those were not, the approval process that was followed was not in line with the regulations. So we raised those issues with management, and also the issues around the preference points that were not allocated in terms of the triple PFA, and also a contract awarded to a bidder based on functionality criteria not stipulated in the original invitation. So all these are the issues that related to irregular expenditure in the current year. And management has started investigating these issues. The investigations are underway. And so we will wait for management to conclude, and then the officials which were responsible for management to take action. And then we'll follow up in the next year to assess whether the action taken by management was appropriate in the circumstances. So those are the issues related to the adjustments and also on irregular expenditure on Brand SA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mastole, can you flight again the agenda?
Okay, sir.
Push it up a bit. That's right. It's all right.
Chair, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. I'm just trying to find that just to enlarge this agenda item so that I can see properly on my screen. That's it. So right now, Mastole, thank you very much. Can I welcome the DM? Is the DM there?
Chair, the DM is here.
Welcome, DM. Can I now invite you to make your overview before the presentations of the entities?
Of the entities. I'm also going to request that I don't activate my
screen. No, it's all right. It's all right.
Screen for the network.
Yeah, because of the network problems, I agree with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by greeting everybody.
Chairperson, my hand is up before the DM, please.
Honorable Somo, can you allow me to chair this meeting?
Yes, Chair, but may I raise something, Chair, if you may allow me? But
no,
I will follow
you. No, I won't allow that. Let's follow the agenda of the meeting.
Thank you, Chair. No problem.
Yes.
Thanks, bye.
Yes.
Just to pass our greetings, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, but also to just greet our colleagues from the AG and to welcome their findings and the report which they have presented. Chair, just also to note that we are still very saddened and hurt by the passing of Mr. Kimi Makwetu. May he rest in peace. We want to thank you, Chair, for the opportunity you have given us to come and present our annual report of 2019-2020. Chair, today we present the annual performance report from DPME, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, Statistics South Africa, and Brand South Africa. Chair, we are very happy to have recorded a better performance of these institutions, and it is our desire that we want to continue to improve and to efficiently assist government systems so that our audit outcomes can always look correctly. Chair and colleagues, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation is on its 8th straight clean audit. We note the concerns which you have raised in relation to Brand South Africa and Statistics South Africa, but we also want to bring it to your attention that it remains our commitment to ensure that the audit findings which are provided to us help us to improve. What we are going to be doing, Chair and colleagues, is that through the audit action plans, we are going to mitigate and ensure that we resolve the identified challenges. Chairperson and colleagues, our performance in all these institutions is well over above 80% mark, which tells a good story of a road to a right direction. Chair, we have recorded the achievements amidst various challenges, which we'll continue to resolve. We want to bring it to attention that we remain committed to ensuring that we improve in relation to DPME, for example, that 8 years trade record, clean record must continue and that cycle must not be broken. We must assist Brand SA to correct and take the correct mitigation and so on. Chair, we come to today. From DPME, I'm going to request that Mr. Clement Madala take us through the report. The SG will also take us through the Statistics South Africa. We are also happy today that we have got board members from Brand South Africa, led by Ms. Tanji Tobias, who is also in the meeting today. And I'm going to request that they take us through and we interact with the presentation. I think it is my belief that from Brand SA, as much as there is the chairperson of the board is here, I think the acting CEO is the one who's going to take us through. So I'm going to request that colleagues, you can start with DPME, then we follow with Brand SA, and then we follow with Brand South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DM. Can we do exactly what you have requested, DM? I can see that the report is blighted. Who must speak to it?
Thank you, Chair. It's Mr. Clement Madale. Chair, our presentation starts with capturing of the performance of the department, which is the annual report part. And the latter part from slide number 49 to the last slide deals with the recommendations of the portfolio committees from various engagements. My screen somehow, Chair, has decided to let me down. I'm not sure if you are able to see the presentation It has.
On my side, I can see it. I don't know other members.
It's just that my screen looks funny, Chair, but if I may proceed, the plan was that my colleague, Mr. Ngosi, will take us through the bit that deals with the annual report, and then I'll take you through the recommendations of the portfolio committee from various engagements. If you allow me, Chair, can I ask Mr. Ngosi, as per arrangement, to take us through the annual report bit?
Okay. Can you come in, Mr. Ngosi?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to all honorable members and colleagues. Yeah, we will start with the presentation as indicated by Mr. Madale. The purpose of our presentation is to report the performance of the department against annual targets as outlined in the departmental annual performance plan. So we'll move to slide number 3. Which mainly deals with the vision and statements. We will not go into those details, and mission statements. We won't go into those details because we believe we are familiar with that, as well as the following two slides which deal with the mandate of the department. I will take us to slide number 6. Which deals mainly with the actual performance of the department. Slide number 6, please, Mr. Madale. Okay.
Sorry, can you put this slide on the bigger screen and remove those two pictures there, the girl and the boy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. It's just that Mr. Madale is the one who's projecting on the other side and we're in different places. I don't know whether I can hear you.
Mr. Madale, I can hear you.
I can hear that. I can hear you and I can also hear Mr. Madad.
If I may be allowed, can I then disengage and then allow Mr. Ngosi to load so that he can drive?
Okay. I agree with that.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yeah. Chair, I don't know whether you can still hear me and whether the screen is showing on your side.
It is showing and I can hear you clearly.
Okay, thank you so much. All right. Okay, we will start with the slide, which is slide number 6. There we are dealing with the department's performance for the annual year, for the 2019-2020 financial year. We are looking at the different programs on the slide. As you can see that all the various branches, starting with the administration, which managed to achieve 12 of its 14 targets and so forth, until the last program, which is program 5, which achieved 7 of its 9 targets. And as indicated by the Honorable Deputy Minister, the department has managed to reach at least 82% of its targets. We will go into the details a bit later. But what we also need to indicate, Chairperson, which is something which has already been mentioned by the Office of the Auditor General, is that the department has received its 8th consecutive clean audit, and which was described as the most desirable outcome by the Office of the Auditor General. And in this specific slide, it's just a graphical representation of what we had already indicated earlier. Now we will go into the annual institutional performance information per program so that we can see how the department has performed. We start obviously with the Department of Administration, whose purpose is to provide strategic leadership, management and support services to the department. As can be seen, the administration component managed to achieve 86% of its targets, which means that the two that have not been achieved represent only 14%. We'll go into details. Namely, the main issues which were highlighted or which caused the department's not achieving its target was in relation to the members who failed to submit their financial disclosures within the specified time frame. And then the second one was in relation to the 10% vacancy rate, which the department was supposed to have reached at the end of the financial year. And you'd recall at the end of the, I mean, our report would indicate that at least we were at 11.5%. So now the status to date is that we have managed to achieve the two targets already, and that all the officials who failed to comply on time were issued with written warnings. And then as it relates to the percentage on filling of funded posts, the target has since been achieved, and now we're currently at 5.4% of all funded vacancies. The next slide, Chairperson, I wouldn't like to waste the meeting's time because those deal with mainly the targets that have been reached. Under this particular program, which is the administration. And then I will move to the next slide, which also deals with targets which have been achieved. And then, so I will not waste the committee's time on this slide either. And then now moving to program 2, which is the national planning coordination, which is divided into the National Planning Commission, which we usually refer to as Program 2A, as well as National Planning Coordination, which we refer to as Program 2B. As it relates to Program 2A, Chairperson, we are pleased to report that we've achieved all the specified targets, which is our National Planning Commission, And then on still that represents those targets which have been set and achieved by the end of the financial year. I will not go into the details on those. And then on program 2B, which is national planning coordination, of the 8 targets, we achieved 6, which represent 75%. And then now I'll focus on those areas where we could not achieve the specific targets, which I think is a matter which was also raised by one of the honorable members during the presentation by the Office of the AG. The first issue, we were supposed to have revised the Integrated Planning Framework Bill and submitted it to Cabinet. The status currently is that there is work which is still underway to ensure the compliance with that specific target. What we need to indicate is that the bill, we have decided it should include the district development model, and then upon finalization of the DDM, it will be incorporated into the bill and thereafter submitted to Cabinet. So that work is currently underway. And the second issue where we had not met the targets was in relation to the budget prioritization framework, which was supposed to be produced for the medium-term expenditure committee. Honorable Chair, that target can only be achieved in the next financial year once the MTSF has been revised. We need to indicate that that particular target hinges on the revised MTSF, Chairperson. So that's why it can only be achieved in the next financial year once those processes have been concluded. I will not go into the details of those other targets as indicated earlier, where we have performed very well and where we have met the targets. And then now I'll move to program 3, which is sector monitoring services. The purpose of the branch is to support the implementation of the medium-term strategic framework by monitoring and improving the capacity of state institutions to develop and implement plans and provide services. We have 2 sub-programs in this program, Honorable Chair, which is the management sector monitoring, and then on the other side is outcome monitoring and intervention support. I will not go into the purpose of each for the sake of time, but we need to indicate that this specific program, we have achieved 7% of the 10, which represents 70%. And then we could not achieve on the 3. And then I will go into a little bit of detail on what we're required to do. We're required to submit monitoring reports to Cabinet, which were supposed to be 24 in number. And then the achievement is that there were delays in the approval of the new MTSF 2019 to 2024. Which led to the deferment of the development of the biannual priorities monitoring reports. And then the second area where we're supposed to deal with the performance agreements of the 28 ministers and 34 deputy ministers. And then the performance in this regard was that all 28 ministers' performance agreements were produced and submitted to the presidency. However, the performance agreements for deputy ministers were not produced. And the reason they could not be produced was because ministers had not completed their delegations to their respective deputy ministers. And the next area where we were supposed to have achieved was in relation to progress reports on the special presidential package on mining towns and labor sending areas. The progress report on the special presidential package on mining towns and labor sending areas were produced and presented in Parliament as the interministerial committee, sorry, actually they were not produced and presented because the interministerial committee and the unit were abolished. So, but we'll, with the next slide focuses on the status to date. We are indicating that the MTSF 2019 to 2024 is still being reviewed. Therefore, we wish to reiterate that those reports which the department was supposed to deal with hinge on the finalized and reviewed MTSF 2019-2024. So hence that specific target could not be achieved, but it's as indicated in progress, but cannot be reported in the 2019-2020 financial year. And the next target, which was in relation to the pro forma performance agreement of ministers and deputy ministers, this specific target, Honorable Chair, we are pleased to report to the committee that it has since been achieved. And then the next target, Chair, which was in relation to the special presidential package on mining towns and labor sending areas. This target, Honorable Chair and members, was missed due to the abolishment of the Ministerial Committee on Mining Towns, and the work was thus discontinued. Chairperson, the next slide focuses on those areas where the department has achieved the targets, thus we will not go into details with those, still under Program 3. And then coming to Program 4, Chairperson, the Public Sector Monitoring and Capacity Development, whose purpose is to ensure government policy coherence, develop, facilitate, and support and monitor the implementation of government priorities, sector plans, and intervention strategies. It has got those specific support programs, which I will not go into detail, but we are pleased to report that the department in this instance managed to achieve 8 of its 9 targets, which constitute 89%. And then now we'll zoom into the target that was not achieved, namely an annual outlook and review report on national and provincial departmental performance assessment. Chairperson, we need to indicate to this meeting that this specific target was rated as not achieved for technical reasons. The report produced included additional information and was renamed Institutional Capacity Improvement Framework. It therefore was not consistent with the targets in the APP, but what we can indicate is that this target has actually been achieved. And then the next slide, Chairperson, still on Program 4, focuses on those areas where the department has achieved its targets, and we will not go into details in that one, the same as the next slide. Now we'll go to Program 5, which is Evaluation, Evidence, and Knowledge System. The purpose of this branch is to coordinate and support the generation, collation, accessibility, and timely use of quality evidence to support performance monitoring and evaluation across government. Chairperson, in this specific program, we achieved 7 of the 9 targets, which constitute 87%. And then we'll now zoom into those areas where we did not perform or achieve the targets and give you the status to date. And we wish to indicate that the report on training for courses provided for government officials to enhance evidence-based policy decision-making processes in government has since been produced. However, as you can see there, that it was produced on the 20th of April, which was after the end of the financial year. Thus, it is reflected as was not achieved in the previous year's financial the previous financial year annual report. And then on the second matter, Chairperson, we are pleased to report that even though when we ended the financial year, only three of the eight evaluation reports which were approved, the other five have since been approved, Chair. But as you can see, they were all produced and approved by the end of April 30th, 2020, which means that we missed the deadline, which was the end of the financial year by 30 days. So the next slide, Chairperson, it deals with all those targets that the department has performed well. And as per audited report, we have achieved them as a department. And now we're going to move to the human resource management issues. Chair, we'll start with the issue of where we were supposed to be dealing with the issue of the vacancy rate, as indicated earlier, that at the end of the financial year, our performance was that it was 11.5% instead of being below the threshold of 10%. What we need to indicate is that what mainly affected us was the issue of staff turnover, which was at 16.9%, as well as the turnaround of time in terms of filling of vacancies. But we do need to indicate that it was below the target, which has been specified by the TPSA of 6 months in filling of vacancies, because the department's performance was at 5.2%. As it relates to the next item, which is employment equity, we wish to indicate that we are still compliant and we're implementing employment equity effectively, because we're at 59.4% as it relates to the composition of our staff as it relates to female. And then we are also at 50% of female who are on SMS level. And then we also wish to indicate that our work skills plan has been approved and being implemented accordingly. And then now we will move to, the next slide actually is showing the composition of our personnel as it relates to gender. We're at 228 for female and 158 for males. And by race, 336 for African, 17 whites, 15 colored, and 18 Indians. Okay, the next slide, Chair, it focuses on vacancies by salary band as at the end of March 2020. You can see there that the department was at 11.5, but the situation has since changed as it had been indicated. Because we're now at 5. And then the graph below that, it represents the vacancy by program as to which programs were actually having more vacancy rates than the others, and matter which has since been addressed as indicated. Chair, still on the issue of employment equity, we wish to indicate that we are still performing above the threshold as it relates to disability, because we're at 2.1%, and then with women in SMS at 50%, and then the other 2 points, they focus on terminations and new appointments which happened during the financial year. And then the next slide, it focuses on utilization of annual leave. I will not go into details on that. I will then therefore move to the next slide, which deals with the budget and expenditure report. Okay, Chairperson, the department's budget was 956,939 million, And then the actual expenditure was 914,518. And then the variance was 42,421. And the expenditure constitutes 95.6% of the budget which was allocated to the department. And then below those totals are just an indication of which areas, which of the programs and how we performed. I will not go into details on those. But we wish to indicate that the reasons for the deviation that we have seen above, that were at 95.6%, it was the underspending which was related to the delays in implementation of the revised organizational establishment, as well as delays in securing additional office accommodation for DPME. So it was a matter of the dependency on the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. And then there was the issue which we also want to report on of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there was 282,000 of confirmed fruitless expenditure, which was primarily related to travel. And then of this, 154,000 is under investigation, which is also related to travel. And then as it relates to irregular expenditure, we wish to indicate that there was 168,000 confirmed irregular expenditure, which was also related to travel and variation orders for venues due to changes in sizes and delegation. And then we wish to indicate that 894,000 of our irregular expenditure is under investigation. That is related to travel and conference venues, as well as 424, which was related to what we perceive is contravention of SCM regulations. So, Honorable Chair and members, we want to indicate that on consequence management on the issues which have been raised above, is that the majority of fruitless expenditure cases were resolved and no disciplinary action was taken, since the fruitless expenditure was beyond the reasonable control of the employees. We want to indicate, however, that 8 cases, which are totaling to 4,243, were referred to recovery from the relevant employees. And supervisors have been accordingly informed of the disciplinary steps to be taken. And we also wish to indicate that the DPME wrote to National Treasury on interpretation of regulations to seek some clarity on certain issues, and the response from National Treasury is still pending. As it relates to irregular expenditure, we wish to indicate that unavoidable variation of venues due to changes in number of delegates at the last minute, which prevented obtaining prior approval from National Treasury. We have also wrote to National Treasury to clarify treatment of such cases. Chair, that brings us to the first part of the presentation, and the next part is the one that is going to be handled by my colleague, Mr. Clement Madale. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Can Mr. Madale come in?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll ask my colleague to drive the presentation to slide number 49. So slide number 49, Chair, summarizes the issues that from the various interactions that we had with the portfolio committee, starting with the recommendations made in the 18-19 annual report, as well as our interaction when we presented our revised annual performance plan in 15 July this year. So I won't go into the detail. Let's go to the next slide, which then answers the progress. So in slide 50, Chair, we are reporting progress to the Portfolio Committee on how we are progressing with regard to the Integrated Planning Bill. The engagement with various stakeholders with regard to the review of the bill is ongoing, Chair. We have since engaged the Department of DECOGTA with the intention of ensuring that the DDM model considerations are accounted for in the bill. The second one, Chair, relates to the fact that the Portfolio Committee, or rather, Chair, there was an expectation that we brief the Portfolio Committee on the piloted district development model and the lessons learned. And this session has already taken place. That was on the 4th of November this year. And then the second one is the issue of taking into account inputs from stakeholders. We are pleased to report that work is underway, and we have also sourced the assistance of the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition to assist us with the legal review and updating of the bill, because as DPME, we do not have the skills required to do that. Next slide, 51. We have established interdepartmental technical committees to ensure that there's alignment with key stakeholders. As the committee might be aware, there has been a constitutional court matter in regard to the issue of separation of powers amongst the three spheres of government. So that issue too is being taken into account. Mr. Ngosi, can you move to the next slide, please? Then there was the issue of the ministerial performance agreements, and this issue, as we have reported, it has been handled. So the concerns of the Portfolio Committee have been taken into account. Slide number 52, that DPME and the Department of Rural Development and Land discuss on the transfer of the National Special Development Function to the NPC to guide future spatial planning and better integration and coordination. In this regard, Chair, work is underway. We have had interactions with the department in regard to this. For now, the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, as well as Land, have developed a national spatial development framework. They are also developing charters, and in that regard, we are working closely with them. We must indicate that, as you know, Chair, this matter was delayed because of the changes in the leadership, both at political level as well as administrative level. But however, is an issue that we are pursuing. Slide number 53, we deal with the issue that DPME must intensify monitoring activities in service delivery points such as police stations. We are pleased to indicate, Chair, that despite COVID-19, our Deputy Minister was very active on the ground in relation to frontline visits, but this in the main related to COVID-19 activities. We need to indicate that, though, that because of fiscal constraint due to budget cuts, the number of monitoring visits will be reduced in the medium term. Nonetheless, as a department, we are invoking the use of technology to enhance our work. In this regard, recently the DM launched a presidential hotline, Khaoleza mobile app in Limpopo, with the intention of expanding the platforms for engagement with citizens. And we hope that this will enhance our effort in ensuring that we are in touch with the citizens in regard to how government is performing. The sixth one, Chairperson, related to DPME monitoring MTSF to assess progress towards the achievement of the NDP objectives. As indicated earlier on, we monitor the MTSF implementation and produce reports. We do know that the MTSF is an instrument through which we implement the electoral mandate as well as the NDP priorities. But because of COVID-19, which befell us around March, and also because of the delays in the finalization of the MTSF, at the time of reporting, we had not produced the biannual report in regard to the implementation of MTSF 2019-2024. However, I must indicate that recently our sector monitoring branch managed to produce a biannual report which was submitted to Cabinet. And reports in respect of the seven priorities are available to be shared with the portfolio committee if required. We then go to slide number 54, where we extracted a recommendation that DPME must be diligent in dealing with the issues raised by the AG. Again, here we say, Chair, our internal control environment, it's effective and is responsive to issues emanating from that environment. And whenever there are challenges, we try and have them corrected. As a result of that, you have already heard that we obtained our eighth consecutive clean audit opinion. The eighth one, Chair, that we picked up is that DPME must conduct a case study on Section 100 interventions to document lessons learned and how much lessons can be used to guide and strengthen the existing policy regime and governance. Chair, our experience in Northwest is being documented. This was our most recent experience in terms of monitoring a Section 100 intervention. And we have a staff deployed there full time to work on this, and they are still working on this. We are documenting the lessons learned, and we are hoping that at the conclusion of this, we'll be able to advise Cabinet on how best we can strengthen the governance and policy regime. The ninth one, Chair, is that DPME must conduct an evaluation on unemployment insurance to determine the extent to which it brought relief to people who could not get paid due to lockdown of business activities. Chair, this work is still underway. We have not yet concluded it. And at the conclusion of the work, the portfolio committee will be appraised about the progress. The last one, Chair, that we have picked up relates to DPME conducting a survey on the impact of COVID-19 on municipalities and the monitoring on COVID-19. Chair, we are pleased to announce that we have conducted this survey in June 2020, which was done over a period of 3 weeks. The focus of that survey was in 5 areas, namely, it was the impact on revenue, the impact on mobilizing resources for expanded services due to COVID, the impact on expenditure, impact on service delivery, impact on staff. Next slide, which is number 53, that slide is a graph that depicts responses per province. And the next slide, Chair, it shows the key findings of the survey. That yes, indeed, revenue was impacted in most instances. Most municipalities, which constituted 78, they were not prepared for revenue. As you will know, it has devastating impact on service delivery. Next slide, number 57. We are indicating there that as reported in News 24, in just 1 month, the COVID-19 pandemic had put about 900 million rand in the revenue of the city of Tshwane. So you can imagine what could have happened in Kwara municipalities. The impact would have been bigger. The impact on municipal expenditure, most of the regular services were suspended. It will thus be difficult to address the significant backlog which is required in the light of dwindling revenue. We will have to find a balance between expenditure and the business as usual agenda of municipalities, as most of the resources were committed to addressing the issues around COVID-19. So we anticipate that this will have a long-term impact. Slide number 58, Chair, its impact on delivery of services. We are saying that on May 27, 2020, it was reported that Etekwini municipalities, that is by way of example, has revoked its COVID-19 lockdown relief scheme amid fears of financial collapse. So you can see that indeed COVID-19 had devastating impact on the on service delivery in general. Also the impact on staff, what we have found is that despite COVID-19 related challenges, municipalities reported that municipal staff were relatively positioned to carry out their duties. So the functions of most municipalities were still being rendered despite those challenges. That, Chair, is the summary of the issues that we extracted from the various interactions with the portfolio committee, and this is our response on the progress there too. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Malomane has connectivity problems, and she has asked me to ask this question on her behalf. The first question from Honorable Malomane is that, how far is the disciplinary process against the officials who failed to submit a financial disclosure framework? And the second question from her is that, in terms of irregular, fruitless and waste expenditure, did the department tighten the internal controls to avoid such to happen in the future? Those are the questions that Honorable Malomane asked me to put on her behalf. Thank you. Honorable Lesoma, come in.
As long as that, let's start by appreciating the comprehensive report that has been presented by the DPME, and also welcome the 2019-20 encouraging audit report. Having said that, Chair, probably the lessons that the department and ourselves in our quest of doing a robust and alive oversight is that around the traveling, that probably also, I hope that traveling by who, by to where, and why was it cancelled, there was no show, it will be prevented in future post the COVID-19, because it happened before the COVID-19. But although we appreciate that there has been some actions towards that to make sure that it doesn't happen in future, although we're not given the reasons why there was no show, safe to say that it was not upon those individual officials to have no show. That's one. Two, Chair, I was very excited yesterday to learn that the executives through the NSG, they are attending training this week, which I'm sure the results will see it by the way the departments also are going to do and achieve their predetermined objectives. But I think I must welcome that. I'll repeat it tomorrow when you engage with DPSA. But I thought I must say, just for record purposes, to raise that one. The third one, Chair, is the Section 100. And I'm sure that while the department is compiling the report and the lessons thereof of Section 100 in the Northwest, Free State. Is that time to time they will also share that information with the COGTA and the provincial government concerned to ensure that there is no repeat while they're still consolidating a report, a final report in terms of the lessons. The other one, Chair, which I would like to raise, if I may, that I hope and I want to believe that not everything is going to be sponsored to COVID-19. Yes, all of us, we agree that COVID-19 has had a negative setback on many programs that the department aimed to achieve and committed to. With regards to the implementation of administration head, does the department conduct a continuous impact assessment to evaluate the progress of implemented programs, which focuses on the broader program coherence and planning? I'm raising this question, Chair, with a very sober mind that says that the department doesn't only look at itself internally, but also has got a mandate to other departments. Let me stop there and congratulate the department with their well done 2019-2020 audit report. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you. Can Honorable Malazi come in? Honorable Malazi.
Thanks, Chair. I'm on. Thanks very much for the opportunity. I just wanted to follow up on two matters, one of which was highlighted in the presentation as concluded, which is with regards to the performance agreement. I noticed that it says that the ones for deputy ministers haven't been finalized due to the claim that the delegated authorities haven't been finalized. And I just find it, you know, very interesting that a year, you know, after the fifth administration came into power, there is no finalization of the delegated authorities for deputy ministers. So if we can get more elaboration on that, and linked to that question is, what is then the time frame for the finalization of those performance agreements for the deputy ministers? Because, you know, as much as we can beat our chest now with the fact that the performance agreements have been finalized, they are way outside of the initially set up deadline. And even when that has happened, there's still more delays, because ultimately, the reference to the performance agreements was not only to the ministers, it was to the ministers and the deputy ministers. And the fact that the ones for deputy ministers haven't been finalized means that the job is not yet concluded, and therefore this can't reasonably be argued that it's been finalized. The second question linked to that is to get just a simple confirmation of when exactly was the last performance agreement by cabinet minister finalized, when that was finalized. And the reason I'm asking this, Chair, is because 2 weeks ago when we had the parliamentary, when we had the sitting with, you know, questions to ministers, and the question was put to Minister Mthembu, he had indicated that they would be finalized on the 18th of October. The session was on the 17th of October. He had indicated that the performance agreements would be finalized by that following day. And subsequent to that, at the post-cabinet briefing, he made reference that, you know, they weren't able to finalize them on that 18th because there were four ministers who had not yet finalized them. And, you know, he made the reference to those who followed that debate that this needed to happen in person. So if we can get that, so that we can see that there's this progress. And lastly, Chair, my question is linked to something that wasn't mentioned in the presentation, but has always been a point of reference for GPME with regards to the program on good governance and heralding this new era of, you know, A-scale government, was the subject of lifestyle audits. You know, I noticed that the presentation doesn't speak about it, but it's a matter that is featured prominently on, you know, the government's program, but also in one of the key programs for monitoring by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. So if we can get a sense there of what is the status quo, how far are we, if there is any movement with, you know, the delivery on that commitment. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Kibi, come in.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me also welcome and appreciate the presentation by the department. Chair, I only have one question, and my question goes with the presenter who presented about the issues that are also being raised, that there are certain processes that are not being followed. So I want to know what measures have the department put in place to stop the issue of expenditure without following SCM processes, as this is having a negative impact on the audit outcome, Chair. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable KB. Honorable Mutsipe.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. I think I've been covered by the honorable members who have spoken before me. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've had such problems with my connectivity today. I don't know what's going on in this area today. Chair, I would really like to know whether we are going to get a report on the COVID expenditure. I mean, the report mentions a 900 million within Tshwane and various other municipalities. Now, I have to concur with Member Lesoma that, you know, not all issues have got to be blamed on COVID. And it would be very interesting to see what the situation was prior to COVID, and then the COVID expenditure, for example, in 20 was 900 million. And if we could get those detailed reports so that we are aware, as from the committee, what was the real expenditure and what impacts COVID really had compared to the situation of what the municipalities were in prior to COVID. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Clark. Honorable Ntuli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I wanted to thank the department because the points that one has raised for noting, they've responded to them. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Honorable Ntuli. Can the department respond to the question raised thus far?
Thank you, Chair. In our midst, we've got colleagues who come from programs, and I think they will assist us with some of the questions that have been raised. But let me respond to the question as raised by Honorable Malumane in relation to disciplinary actions on those employees who did not submit their disclosures on time. let me report that these officials ultimately did comply, but because they did so outside of the time allowed, those who had valid reasons were excused, but those who did not have valid reasons were issued with written warnings. In terms of the control environment in relation to irregular expenditure, we do have strong systems in DPME to detect irregular expenditure. However, most of this expenditure happens due to unforeseen circumstances. So in some, you'll recall, Chairperson, that we are talking about the annual report of the previous financial year. So that's when things were normal and people were going to various places. So in some instances, irregular expenditure happens because somebody flies to a particular area, there's supposed to be a meeting, the meeting is cancelled. Or sometimes you have arranged a meeting for 10 people, and when you get to the meeting, ultimately you have got 20 people, due to the fact that some of the stakeholders do not bother to confirm whether they will be attending or not. So despite the issues that we have raised of irregular expenditure and so on, the control environment is such that we are able to detect and take corrective action in relation to that. I think DDG Lefatula is here, mostly Lefatula is here. In terms of the Section 100 intervention report, which of course the monitoring that is happening there is taking place with the involvement of departments such as COGTA and so on. But I think he can give further details on that. And I think DDG Godfrey Mashamba, it's also here, you can take some of the questions. And those that will be outstanding, maybe DM, if she can, she will respond. But we'll respond to all the questions, Chair, with your permission.
Okay. I didn't follow the order of the names to respond. Can the first gentleman come in and respond?
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. It's Blake Mosley Lefatula, the DDG for Public Sector Monitoring and Capacity Building in DPME. There's just a few comments that I want to make in relation to the issues that honorable members have raised. The one issue is in relation to the Section 100 intervention. As we indicated that we are busy compiling a report to note what the lessons are from the Section 100 intervention, because what we would want to do as government is that we actually want to ensure that government has got proactive monitoring systems in place that will tell us well in advance when things are not going right, so that government intervenes timeously and not when the crisis hits the ground. And part and parcel of that team that's doing the monitoring, it's ourselves together with colleagues from DCOCTA, and also colleagues from the provincial COCTA department. And it is primarily to improve, you know, the monitoring systems and to ensure lessons learned around interventions and how interventions can actually work better. So that's the, information that I can share in relation to the Section 100 interventions. There was also a question that was raised around lifestyle audits, just to indicate that this process of conducting lifestyle audits amongst primarily the appointed, officials is at a fairly advanced stage. Discussions have been held between DPSA and all the other departments that belong to the governance state institutional capacity development departments, and also in the National Anti-Corruption Task Team, where the guidelines have actually been discussed, how this matter should be approached, you know, et cetera. The next step would be to ensure that whatever recommendations actually come are actually forwarded to your cabinet, et cetera. So that's the work that is actually happening around the discussions around the lifestyle audits. And I'm sure that we'll be able to come back to Parliament with the end result, you know, of the recommendations that will actually come from that. And then in relation to COVID expenditure report, this we can actually make available, Chair. We need to note that National Treasury is actually the custodian of, but we are also working with National Treasury in terms of monitoring the impact, you know, of COVID and the expenditure. So what we can do is to access the report from National Treasury and make that available and submit that, you know, to the committee, just to indicate that COVID expenditure would still be ongoing, given that we are still experienced, given that we are still in, you know, lockdown level one of the pandemic. And then the last question relates to the performance management agreements of deputy ministers. Now, we need to note that the ministers actually delegates powers and functions to the deputy ministers. Once that has actually been completed, then the performance management agreements can actually be crafted in terms of the delegated functions that have been given to the deputy ministers by the ministers. That process has already started, but I'm not in a position to give an exact time frame as to when it can be, when it will be concluded, and that information can also be submitted to the you know, committee later on. So those are the that's the information that I wanted to share with some of the, you know, questions that honourable members raised. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Is there any person that I didn't give opportunity to respond on your team? Or have all of you responded to questions?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, from our side, we think that the questions have been responded to. I can't identify any that still needs a response, unless if I miss something. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Madale. Masole, can you flight again, Chair, the item?
Chair, I've got a follow-up.
Or is that Malati? Okay, come in, Malati.
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I'd raised my hand. I thought you would see it, that I wanted to do a follow-up. Yeah, look, I get the response on the two questions that I asked, Chair, but I'm of the view that every process has a beginning and an end, right? And I think when, you know, colleagues come to the committee and we seek an indication of the timelines, it is specifically for the reason that we need to satisfy ourselves that we'll be able to do our job. And I raised this in relation to the response that was given, that, you know, the lifestyle audits are at a very advanced stage. I mean, you know, advanced, something that is advanced can be relative, deciding on which side of the argument is. And I'm not being very argumentative, but I think a project like this has a timeline that indicates that this is the intended timeline. This is when we aim to have finished all the preparatory work, and this is when we aim to have concluded it, so that it can then, you know, be go through the official channels and we can come to the committee and say this is conducted. In the absence of failing to respond to a simple question around when will the lifestyle audits be finalized in terms of your own planning. I think it makes it very difficult, Chair, to accept the responses in the manner that they are that they are being put, because it is not a very complicated question to say that in your own planning, what is the lifespan of this goal and when do you intend to wrap this up? Because it is linked to an annual performance plan, and an annual a year has 12 months, depending on which side you measure it. So we want to be able to know that, is this something that is relevant for this financial year? Is it going to roll over to the next financial year? Thanks very much.
Thank you. Honorable Soma, I see you have raised your hand. Honorable Soma, come in.
Oh, got you. My apology, Chair, not the time. Is that because I wanted to raise the same issue that Honorable Malase have raised, but in a different angle, to say that when we ask questions that are project-based, probably the department, if they can finish us with the timeline, take for them to adopt a project management approach where there's a responsible person, and what time and what is the status as it stands now, it will be most welcome. As I'm going to suggest, Chair, that can we get that information not later than next week, Wednesday? We will really appreciate in writing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Elson. Maskole, can you fly to the agenda so that we go to the next item on the agenda? Maskole, are you still there? Maskole is muted. What is the next item on the agenda? That's the reason I'm asking my scholar to flight it. Can his colleague assist my scholar, please?
Chair, this is Risenga Maluleke from State SA. As far as I remember, we were the next ones to be called on to account by you, Chair.
Okay, shoot, SG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have asked that Ms. Celia de Klerk flights our presentation, which we were given right to flight. But let me also indicate, Chairperson, that SA's delegation includes DDGs of different components and acting DDGs, the CFO, and two colleagues in the office of the SG.
SG,
we will get to the
SG. Can you hold a bit? I see that Honorable Soma has raised the hand.
No, Chair. My apologies to us then.
Okay. Thank you. Continue, SG.
The content of our presentation, Chairperson, talks to the recommendations of the portfolio committee previously. We will look at the annual report for 2019-2020 that is looking at organizational performance, financial performance, as well as human resources performance. We will look at matters of the census, which were also raised previously by the portfolio committee, and legislative reform progress as previously raised by the portfolio committee. Chairperson, let us look at recommendations coming out of the previous appearance of State SA to the Portfolio Committee. We were advised to expedite the amendment bill, that's legislative reform, which we'll follow in detail later in this presentation. We were directed actually to capacitate, enhance, and enrich municipalities with statistics knowledge, statistical knowledge, to support the district development model. Of course, Census 2021 will provide information in relation to municipalities, but the capacity building part to the municipalities is not funded. So what we will do is we'll disseminate our information, and where practically possible, we will be able to assist municipalities to use our data. But beyond that, in terms of a focused capacity building program, we have limitations of funding. We were directed to skill and reskill our employees on numerous aspects that relate to digitalization. And of course, we were also advised to look at the readiness of Census 2021. On Census 2021, as I've indicated, we'll talk to it later in this presentation. But in relation, Chair, to the whole issue of skilling and reskilling, we are using currently what we call computer-assisted personal interviews, CAPI, where we go and arrive in person and interview people, but capturing information electronically. We are also using remotely computer-assisted telephone interviews, and we are also deploying and testing transition to computer-assisted web interviews, and this was largely tested in one of our tranches of tests or battery of tests that relate to Census 2021. And of course, all staff members in the provinces and regions are being exposed to all these activities. Census 2021 data collection process must be inclusive, that is with regard to connectivity to remote rural areas. Of course, the use of alternative modes of collection in relation or beyond the computer-assisted personal interviews in the deployment of computer-assisted telephone interviews as well as computer-assisted web interviews is ongoing. One thing that we must say here is that remote areas in our country are even open to challenges of connectivity in themselves generally. So some of these technologies may not be readily deployable because, especially for Census 2021, we rely on service providers, MTN, Vodacom, and Telkom, and Cell C. And of course, it depends on whether they have laid such infrastructure. Going forward, Chairperson, we were directed to prioritize the filling of critical positions using the allocated amount of 49.4 million. We have already started with the filling of critical positions, and the interviews are in progress. Chairperson, we were advised and directed to continue and be cautious with National Treasury in our engagements to ensure that the cutting of the department's budget could cause more damages or could cause could have adverse effects on the work of status. Discussions are ongoing with National Treasury. These are discussions that will never stop because National Treasury keeps on coming back to cut the budgets, not only of status, but of other government departments as well. Status, together with National Treasury, should ensure, as promised, that the budget of Census 2021 remains ring-fenced. So far, there has been no budget cuts on Census 2021. Safe to say that the outer year is not fully funded. But we cannot, from status side, we can't guarantee this because National Treasury has already come back to us on two occasions to say we have to surrender some money, especially in the wake of COVID-19. They have wanted to direct funding to the COVID-19 pandemic. And we were also directed by this committee that we should continue to provide statistical advice on the methodology of administrative records to compile statistical information. Our SANS branch, which is South African National Statistics System, which doesn't look only at status A products, but goes beyond products of status A, certainly is attending to this, but we have challenges of resources, both in terms of financial and, of course, human resources in that unit. And the reality is that there are some requests that were made to us that we have had to turn away owing to not having human resources and financial resources. We were directed again that the SSA should devise long-term connectivity strategy in collaboration with other stakeholders to link up with deep rural areas through technology in order to harvest information. This is part of the future of our ecosystem, Chairperson, and it will require financial investment. We were also advised, Chairperson, that national, no, my apologies. I need us to move to the next slide, Celia. We were also directed that the National Treasury, together with SSA, should develop a lasting funding solution to avoid collapse of SSA. Discussions are ongoing with SSA. The Portfolio Committee should invite National Treasury to brief it on its rationale for previous budget cuts in relation to SSA. This is a matter that certainly the, is within the remit of the Portfolio Committee Chair. So is the following one that seeks to have the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs and SALGA to be approached to request local government municipalities to cooperate with SSA as regards the issue of compiling statistical information. This is a matter for the Portfolio Committee. The Minister in the Presidency and National Treasury should attend to the inability of SSA not being able to collect and release data on the income and expenditure household survey. This is the poverty survey due to financial constraints. Intentions to meet have already been agreed by both ministers, that is the Minister in the Presidency and the Minister of Finance. The actual meeting is yet to take place. And lastly, Chair, SSA should go through its legislative amendments and make sure that we regulate the production of administrative data. And the whole issue is based on the Amendment Act that we are working on, a presentation that will come later. Chair, let me not apologize. Let me apologize for not indicating that these three slides that I just presented have been added to what was sent earlier. We thought it's prudent, Chair, to start with matters that the committee had raised previously so that it's easier for us to engage. Let me also indicate that I might have skipped the name of the acting CFO in SSA as part of our delegation. I must admit there are a lot more people acting in SSA than those that are permanent, but let's get straight to the annual report. SSA has achieved 91% of its targets as planned for this financial year under review. As we do so, we have we had 512 targets that were achieved as scheduled, and 28 were achieved early, 9 were achieved late, and 53 were not achieved at all. And the 53 that were not achieved largely relate to issues of resources in terms largely due to human resources, a matter that we'll talk to later. When we look at the programs of SSA, we can see that program 2 and then of course program 3 and 4 performed higher than SSA's average, while other programs performed a lot more lower. But on overall, SSA's performance sits at 91%. I want us to talk straight to the highlights of the performance. Statistical outputs, we published 281 statistical releases and reports on the economy and society, and of course, user-paid surveys. We delivered the census of commercial agriculture, which we worked with the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs. And of course, we conducted the National Household Travel Survey. We handed over the results of the 2018 census of tenants at the Kuga Special Economic Zone in the Eastern Cape. And of course, handed over the results of the second phase of the Mpumalanga Employment and Business Survey. are more in terms of modernizing statistics, the statistical value chain. Geospatial information frame was digitized, and we rolled out the digital data collection methodology. That is, four household surveys have gone through this. And the quarterly labor force survey, parallel survey, was conducted and for digital collection, but also for purposes of comparisons with our paper-based collections. And furthermore, census mini test was conducted. When we look at the national statistics system, we designed the South African, South African Police Service, that is SAPS Crime Statistics, as official. And of course, there are matters, issues that they still need to adhere to, which we are looking at over the next 3 years for us to be able to sustain the official status. Otherwise, if they can't meet those prescripts, such official statistics by SAPS may be relegated back to just quality statistics of any nature. Independent statistical support, we responded to a national call from the Independent Electoral Commission when the results of the national and provincial elections were contested. And I must say, Chair, that the input by STATSA put to rest this matter that was being raised by political parties in relation to disputes surrounding the elections, usually about votes that were thought to have been allowed, especially with the challenges of the Zip scanner machines not working properly. Let me mention also, we launched the Gold Tracker tool, which is a digital portal to track the sustainable development goals, and we work with other agencies and other countries across the world. Service delivery, of course, 95% of simple inquiries were handled within 15 minutes. 90% of normal inquiries were handled within 24 hours. And these relate to a whole range, some of which relate to our user, the data that we are producing by our users. Some of them relating generally to requests and issues raised by members of the public. As regards our users particularly who came, we had 2.7 million website visitors. And of course, 398,000 documents were downloaded. And indeed, overall performance for STATSA within, overall user satisfaction survey is sitting at 86.4%. What we do, Chair, we do from time to time check how satisfied our users are, because that is the only way we can know whether we are serving the public and indeed our users sufficiently enough or not. And of course, we do make improvements from time to time based on the issues that we are engaging them on. Let us look at financial performance. Our allocation, Chairperson, was 2.514 billion. We have used 2.553 billion, which means that we have gone 1.6% over expenditure, and in relation largely to compensation of employees, a matter that I will explain in the next slide. But we also received an unqualified audit with findings, and I will come to that. The unqualified audit in relation to findings, there was an issue of procurement in relation to local content, which the Auditor General has briefed this committee earlier. And indeed, ourselves and the AG engaged for a long time on this matter, because the advice that was coming from National Treasury and DTI were conflicting, and the AG is aware of our engagement on this matter, that finally the AG chose to the fact that we should have included local content even when quotations are being sourced, not when we are talking of tenders that are advertised in the excess of half a million rands. So in this regard, we had a long outstanding difference on this matter. And finally, the outcome was that because we didn't uphold the law, we were found, there were findings in this regard. But I must admit that this matter is based on the advice that we get. And as issues of procurement sometimes go beyond the work of STATSA, consultations with National Treasury as well as DTI were engaged, and they were conflicting in this regard. We also have issues of unauthorized expenditure relating to compensation of employees. These are not new employees. These are employees that are on the payroll of State SA. And we have never been given enough money by National Treasury to pay our employees. And Chair, we will not be in a position to stop paying them because we will cause a lot of labor challenges, of including civil disobedience. So we continue to pay them until National Treasury will one day give us sufficient funds for funding of warm bodies in State SA. There is an uncertainty relating to the future outcome of the exceptional litigation, the litigation that State SA is facing with the service provider that built or assisted in the PPP contract to build the building in which State SA is housed. And of course, this relates to our moving in 2016, where it was delayed because the city of Tshwane had not issued a certificate of occupation, and we could not move in while the service provider didn't have that certificate, largely for purposes of the fact that they were still doing some work in the building. And it also relates to some renovations that they had to do while we hadn't moved in. So this matter is before the courts, and certainly we are confident that we will pull it off. But there is a matter, Chair, that the AG also spoke to, which is irregular expenditure, which relates to the use of PAKISA, the transversal contract. I must say, Chair, that this one and the AG, we have engaged them over 2 years. Firstly, on matters of contract, Chair, we get advice from National Treasury. And in this one, we have a letter from GTEC, which the AG is aware, which was presented to us to say that we can go ahead and procure services from the transversal contract. Because when it expired, it was extended by a year between 2019 and 2020, and it finally expired in February 2020. And in this regard, we did so because, one, we were advised to do so by GTEC. Two, we have operations that if we acquire services from a service provider before the contract ends, if we are to stop field work in the middle of a contract ending, and in this regard, GTEC had told us that we can use the contract. If we are to stop field ops, we will disrupt the entire system of national statistics, not only for State SA, for the country. One, because we have monthlies that must come. The prices, our field workers are out in field. CPI must come every now and then. Number two is that we have a quarterly report, like the quarterly labor force survey, that must come from time to time. Now, they rely on the use of transport. Now, the problem is when we are advised to go ahead by those who have authority on matters contracting, and we have gone ahead doing so, and we have field work in the Midland, that's why we asked for their opinion. It's because we saw a risk that we were facing. So this matter was not first raised now. It was raised previously by the AG, but we were able not to find it as irregular. But this time, we have found it, the AG has found it irregular. But we went ahead on the basis of advice and operational was the imperatives that we were facing as State SA. And the AG is aware of these issues. Let us look, Chair, in terms of our financials. What we were allocated represents largely, I want to talk to compensation of employees. Our budget is represented by 60% that goes to compensation of employees. Because of the fact that we don't have enough money to fund warm bodies, we ended up spending 61% in compensation of employees. That is on the representation that goes below, that is the actual expenditure. But let us look at the additional allocation that we received, Chair. Our baseline allocation was 2.294 billion. And of course, this is largely, if we look at compensation of employees, the over expenditure of 50.9 million was applied due to final environment in the organization. We were given once off 75 million rand by National Treasury to appoint contract staff to address the issue of field work, because in the financial year, if we didn't get money, almost half of our key surveys in the field had to stop. We didn't have money to appoint field workers, meaning that we would have failed to produce basic statistics. And indeed, Census 2021, 145 million was made available, and the expenditure of was 97% was recorded after internal environment. In terms of programs and their performance, they vary, Chairperson. Some having performed in terms financially a lot more higher. But let me mention that largely it's in the area where we have our field work and our social, our social statistics, where we see that we rely on deploying a lot of people in the field and we see a lot of expenditures. But finally, we are sitting at 101.6% of our expenditure, which was driven largely by compensation of employees. Now, unauthorized expenditure, Chairperson, and this is a matter that I have spoken to from different angles. As of 2019-2020, we are sitting at 172 million, and this has been rising from 2017-2018. And this is mainly due to compensation of employees overspending. And of course, due to budget cuts, the compensation of employees resulting in warm bodies not being affordable will continue unless government comes with a way through which we can retrench staff members. But one department starting to do that will cause a lot of problems and harm for the entire government. Let us look at human resources at a glance. We have a total of about 2,790 employees. Our vacancy rate is sitting at 20.5%. We have seen in the financial year terminations of 116 staff members, and there have been no new appointments. We are losing about 24 to 27 staff members per quarter. And indeed, a year we are losing in the excess of 100 staff members. And this is the staff members that we are losing, Chairperson, are amongst our most experienced, some with the best expertise, and some who have served us much longer. So we are losing a lot of seasoned staff members. And in any organization, Chair, the first ones you lose are your best performers, because they can always find a job anywhere else. And in this regard, as we lose them, it's got major impact on the work that we do. SMS post field is 72.2%. Women in SMS is 41.1%. This is a matter together with the one below, staff with disability, where we are sitting at 1.4%, which we have repeatedly raised with Parliament that as soon as funds are made available for us to be able to hire, we will look at this matter and make sure that we bring the necessary parities in line with the directives by government. Because over years, we haven't been able to address this. But in the last 3 years specifically, there just has been no post-field to start addressing these issues. Leave is 10 average sick leave days per staff member. Chairperson, and indeed honorable members, in terms of field posts, we can indicate that 1,285 were male, whereas 1,505 were female. And female staff members account for about 54%, while male staff members account for 46%. But when we go to the SMS positions, we can see that it swaps. The majority are women in status state, but they are not the majority in SMS positions, which then creates a serious problem for us if we don't feel we don't address these issues a lot more speedily. Let us look at human resources. In terms of human resources, we can see that we are sitting at about 87% being Black African, 5% being colored, and that accounts for 146 staff members. 162 staff members are white, and indeed they account for 5.8%, and 1.7%, which represent 48 staff members, are of Indian Asian origin. In this regard, let me correct, not of Indian Asian origin, Indian stroke Asian, not of origin, my apologies. Now, let us look at SMS. We can see that while Black staff members account for 87%, there is a gap of about 20 percentage points between the number of actual staff members and those that are represented in management. And of course, we can see the colored sitting at 6% and 18% among the whites, and 9% among the Indian Asians. And what we see here is that we have a lot more representation of white staff members in SMS compared to the number of staff members in the organization, because the number of staff members are sitting at about 5.8%, whereas in SMS we are sitting at 18%. And this is a matter that the portfolio committee has raised with us. This is a matter that our minister continues to monitor closely, and there is not much we can do until we can fill new positions in terms of employment equity amongst all the race groups. Chairperson, the whole issue of representation of SMS parity as of the 31st of March 2020 is sitting still with challenges in terms of what we have and what we need to achieve. Let me say that on this slide, one of the things that is challenging is that we do not have enough women properly represented in statistics across all population groups. When we look at Africans, we can see that there are more males, 70% male, 58% female. And when we look at coloreds, 2% female, 9% male, Indian, 5% male, not female, and 13% female, and indeed amongst the whites, 21% male and 14% female. So this is a matter that we have to address, certainly, no doubt. The vacancy rate of SETSA has been rising over time from 2015, 2016, all the way to the year under review, 2019-2020. Progress on priority projects. Let's look at the census. Indeed, on the census, in the preparation of census 2021, four tests have been conducted. That is new methodologies. In 2018, 2019, census 2021 mini test phase one. Phase two was done again in this year, 2020. And census 2020 trial census 2021 trial was done again this year. And this was done even in the face of challenges of COVID, meaning that we had to test new methods for collection and see if should COVID sustain, if we'll be able to collect data. But as we look at the design of census 2021 trial test, we have taken into account COVID-19 pandemic. The whole issue of budget constraints is taken into account. The multimodal collection approach that looks at CAWI, that is computer-assisted web interviews, CATI, computer-assisted telephone interviews, and CAPI, computer-assisted personal interviews, are being looked at. And there's a need to embed the fourth industrial revolution in our statistical value chain. Furthermore, census pilot is now scheduled for February 2021. It was supposed to have happened this year, but it has been disrupted by the COVID environment, when movements amongst people in the country couldn't occur, and indeed also for our field workers, and planning was disrupted. But let us look at the governance structure of the census. There are committees that have been established to look at the issues of the census. The State Council, which is an independent body, but we have established an element of the council that looks at issues relating to the census. And of course, there's a National Advisory Committee that was inaugurated on 6 November.
There is also EXCO, which is our management team in CETESE that looks at issues of the census. There's a steering committee that has to be established that has to work largely to look at detailed issues that EXCO cannot look at. The minister remains the political head of CETESE and is a lead ambassador in the census project. And at an appropriate time, the minister will be brought in to deal with issues of advocacy and community mobilization, and indeed to improve on public participation and trust and maintain a census oversight. There is an issue of parliament as well, that we have to engage parliament at the portfolio committee at an appropriate time for purposes of gaining enough traction in, amongst members of the public as regards the census. The minister in parliament, while the political responsibilities, when they get involved in the census, they will not be involved on methods, on recruitment, or anything that relates to census operations. They will only be involved on matters that relate to community mobilization and publicity and advocacy, largely advocacy at the higher level, because operational matters, including methodology, have to remain independent, and the statistician general must make sure of such independence. In terms of the census, the timelines, sorry, my apologies, and the timelines and milestones. We have started, of course, with community mobilization, and not started. In 2021, my apologies, we will deal with community mobilization. We will look at the geographic frame update by June. Matters of procurement will be looked at in relation to a census, and the majority of them should be concluded by May. We have already started with some of them, because some of them need enough lead time to deal with these issues. There's an issue of forward logistics, issues of recruitment, national workshops and the like, data collection and training, my apologies. We don't only recruit, we have to recruit and train all our field staff. When they arrive at households, or when they phone a household, or when they must assist members of the public on computer-assisted web interviews, they must know what they are dealing with. And so the questionnaire, they must understand it from back to front, from front to back, all the way. And indeed, data collection will happen in October next year, and issues of payment of field workers will be done in November, while the post-enumeration survey will commence. The post-enumeration survey is very critical in assisting us to know how many people we have missed, so that we can estimate the undercount, and of course, to be able to adjust the population estimates accordingly. And of course, there will be editing of the data that we'll have received, and editing of the PES, and of course, analysis and debriefing. And furthermore, there will be analysis and matching by PES work. The PES work must be analyzed and be confirmed how many people were missing, and such matching processes do take time. And beyond that, going into 2022, we will make the data available. In census 1996, it took us 2 years to make the data available after the census. Census 2001, it took us 2 years. They were released in 2003. In 2011, it took us 1 year to make the data available. And of course, this is with the deployment of technology. We do not want to overpromise members of the portfolio committee, but we would not want to exceed a year, especially with the deployment of technology that we are having. And we will work around the clock to make sure that as soon as we are done with field work, the results are out without delay. The world has changed, and it needs more data, a lot more quicker than we used to have data available. Census 2021, way forward, pilot census night confirmed as 1st February 2021. And of course, PS preparations are underway. The main census is scheduled for 9th. The night of the 9th October, waking up into the 10th, and gazetting processes for census night will have to go ahead as they have already begun. And of course, finalization of the multimodal approach in terms of computer, in terms of personal interviews where our field workers will be there, or the whole issue of telephonic, computer-assisted telephonic interviews, as well as computer-assisted web interviews. All these modes will be deployed, of course, based on where we can deploy them in the society and the availability of necessary infrastructure in the form of network from a mobile operator companies. Legislative reform progress, Chair. The socioeconomic impact assessment system has been finalized, and of course, certification of the statistics amendment bill has been finalized with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Approval was granted through the socioeconomic impact assessment system. And of course, the DGs, a committee of DGs or a cluster of DGs has supported this, and it was sent through to ministers, a cluster of ministers. And there were issues that were raised at the level of ministers that we need to continue to engage with the Office of the Information Regulator, a matter that is being taken into account, and engagements are ongoing. So we will take this matter back to the ministers, that is the cluster of ministers that deal with governance, state capacity, institution, and institutional development. And of course, once that is done, it will be taken to cabinet to process further. Chairperson, what are our statistics at risk, and or where are the risks of statistics? The demands for statistics keep on coming at national, local level, continental, global level. Let me mention, Chair, that the COVID-19 environment, although it's not part of the report of this financial year, because when COVID-19 was kicking in into our country, we were almost concluding the financial year. And indeed, our field worker work program was impacted as of the 20th of March, even before the president could was that bring stage level 5, alert level 5, was that locked down as of the 27th of March. However, this was at the tail end. But borrowing from the experience of COVID-19, which we'll report in the next financial year, in this financial year when we report next year, is that it has taught us that data is much more demanded than ever when we are facing a crisis such as this pandemic. Budget cuts, we have experienced severe budget cuts, not only from the cuts that we had experienced previously, but even during COVID-19, we have seen them occurring, but this is a matter for another financial year. But warm bodies are not affordable, let's say. And of course, the poverty survey, the income and expenditure survey, IES, and the living conditions survey, LCS, are not funded, meaning that we will not be able to give the nation poverty figures until we are funded. And this has an effect on the consumer price index basket, because the basket of goods will not be updated as we would have wished to, because we can know we can only know that if we know what the people are spending on, what are the South Africans spending their money on. This will have an impact on the GDP, especially from the household side. It will have serious impact, so our GDP will be challenged at some stage. The high vacancy rate, let us say, is quite an issue. And of course, 116 staff members, my apologies, not 118 staff members, have left. And staff members are overstretched. There are times where, let us say, staff members are doing their work and acting in other areas. In some cases, there are staff members who are acting in two other areas other than their basic work. It's affecting us a lot more, Chair. And indeed, the supply of basic statistics is at risk. But what we will do, and we are continuing to do, is that we are protecting the core statistics as of now. But we can only protect it up to an extent. Chairperson, looking forward, we are driving legislative reform and we should conclude it. We are maintaining the quality of national indicators. We will conduct Census 2021 and we continue to deal with its test as of now. And of course, will drive business transformation and change, and will realign our resources and the structure. And these are things that we are looking forward for the next 3 years. My apologies. The next slide, Chairperson, says ndiyela kwala, meaning that I finish here and ndiyaqeda khona ngoku ngalomkhulu umbuliso. I finish here. In English and Afrikaans, we say finish and klaar. I'm done. The next slide looks like it's blank, Chairperson. I thank you.
Thank you, SG. In the interest of time, honorable members, can I suggest that we get Brand SA presentation and then we will discuss these two together? Can I get approval from honorable members to do that?
Yes, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Can Brand SA come in, please?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to Chair, good morning to Deputy Minister, and good morning to honorable members and colleagues. Chair, I need to apologize. I've got a terrible cold, and on top of that, I had to stay in a police station the whole night as an intruder was stalking me, and I'm injured. So today, my delegation from Brand South Africa comprises board members, namely Mr. Lulu Johnson, Mr. Jack Mutifani, Mrs. S. Sander, and then we have officials led by the CEO, acting CEO, Mrs. Julie Manzini, the acting CFO, Khomotso Sirikule, and Dr. Judy Smith-Hall, and Dr. Krishni. And our company secretary, Mrs. Fizz Nyoni. Chair, this year was the most difficult year for Brand South Africa, given that we are a brand reputation management organization. Therefore, we don't only manage South Africa Incorporated, but we look at issues of the economy. We look at issues that has been tabled by the president, which we look at foreign direct investment, and we do both domestic and international analysis as to where we stand. Therefore, if you look at our annual report, it will reflect on the activations that we were able to activate before COVID-19, but were hamstrung by COVID-19 itself, as we mostly do constitutional activations on the ground. Therefore, we meet stakeholders and we do our work through stakeholder engagement. So we will be led by our acting CEO, as I do not have a voice to be able to speak to my notes, as I apologize in advance because of that. And she will be able to highlight the work that you have done. But we also need to put across the fact that the performance of Brand South Africa has improved over time from what it was before to where we are. And hence today I ask members of the Audit and Risk Committee to accompany me so that they can be able to respond to issues of compliance that has been raised by the Auditor General that we will have to deal and improve on. So if you look at our audit, there's still outstanding issues that we're going to report on, but this team will be able to answer any question that the committee is going to raise and will be able to take forward issues of management that needs to attend to. Issues of misstatements and irregular expenditure will also be addressed in the meantime. So thanks, Chair. With that short, I hope you will forgive me for not being able to speak properly and allow my CEO to lead the team that can make a presentation as allowed, Chair.
I can allow that. I don't want to torture you any further.
Thank you.
Allow it.
Thank you very much, Chair. Madam CEO, can you please lead the presentation for the team, please, and also introduce.
Thank you. I have unmuted. I'm just waiting for Dr. J to put the presentation up on the screen. Greetings to the chairperson of the portfolio committee, the portfolio committee members, deputy minister, chairperson of the board members and colleagues. I will quickly run through the presentation of our annual report, what we have been able to achieve and what is still outstanding and what are we doing about it, and also report on the issues that the Auditor General has raised. Thank you. Next. This particular slide is a standard slide where we talk about Brand South Africa, just so that we remind colleagues and we remind ourselves as to who we are, and that we always remain on top of mind, that we are strategically positioned as South Africa's nation brand management agency. That is our primary role, and that the primary objective of the trust is to develop and implement proactive and coordinated marketing, communication, and reputation management for South Africa. I will not dwell too much on it, but I just wanted as a reminder to say, who is this Brand South Africa? On the next slide, please. What is our mandate as Brand South Africa? We also like to put this particular slide so that we not forgotten as to who are we. Brand South Africa, build South Africa's nation brand in order, one, to build investor confidence and contribute towards attracting global investors, tourists, and increasing consumers of South African goods and services. To also enhance South Africa's international stature, also develop and disseminate key messages that effectively and positively tell the unique story of South Africa. We also inspire pride, patriotism, social cohesion, nation branding, and positive change in South Africa. We inspire loyal and advocacy in expatriate South African. We have a program, the GSA, counter negative messages and impressions of South Africa, because as soon as there are negative messages about the country, we need to then immediately come with counter messages that will counter the negative. So we need to come with the positive. We showcase our achievement of the NDP. We assist government and the private sector in aligning their country communication strategies. And above all, we also leverage on strategic global events and engagement that are there. Like, for instance, now there is the investment conference. We leverage on such strategic global events. Yes. That is our vision and our mission. I'm not going to read it. Next. Our values are there. We have got six values, which is determined, Ubuntu, cooperation, innovation, diversity, and integrity. In our annual report, the minister said something that we thought it's worth quoting. Minister said, "A nothing nature has a sense of shared national pride better than the country consciously making efforts in nation building activities, and nothing unites a people better than sports, arts, and culture." And this is very true. And you'll see as I continue with our presentation how sports, arts, and culture have been able to unite the people of South Africa. The environment analysis, our key themes from domestic environment analysis, South Africa, we emerged at the sixth administration and parliament was in place, and President Ramaphosa delivered SONA and presented the nation with the seven priorities. I'm mentioning the seven priorities that we all know. I'm not going to read them, that whatever that we do as Brand South Africa, we make sure and we check notes and confirm that we still do everything that we do based on these seven priorities that the president delivered at SONA. The key themes from domestic, and again, this year we saw a general worsening of the GDP outlook, and the public sector governance, state capacity, and unethical conduct remain under scrutiny due to ongoing revelations of corruption, the commission of inquiry, the issue of the state capture that we all know. And I must say up front that this issue of the state capture is not necessarily a bad thing for us, but it also goes to show how transparent we are as a country in dealing with processes and decisively on dealing with issues of corruption. But what will be even more interesting to assist and push the brand will be when now all the recommendations are then dealt with, not necessarily just recommendations, but everything that comes up is then followed up with a proper action plan. So, but this has assisted us, as I'll be going further in terms of research, to show how it has put us in the map as a country in terms of transparency and how we rank. And the achievement in the realm of the sports and culture, like I've said in the quote of the minister, continue to drive positive perception of the nation brand. One, the Springbok team's overall victory in the Rugby World Cup, that has put us on the map of South Africa, because even people who didn't know about us or who pretended not to know about us, at least there was something out there that was positive. The Miss South Africa who won the Miss Universe contest, yes, of course, because of the COVID-19, unfortunately, her period was disturbed with that, but the fact that we had a Miss South Africa who became Miss Universe, it has also put us on the map, and it was positive on the nation brand. And also the Ndlovu Youth Choir, which reached the finals on the America's Got Talent. That also, these are all the positive stories. Next. And also the international environment continued to be characterized by increasing policy uncertainty and major power rivalry in both political and economic context. The turbulent changes in the international trade system due to increased polarization, economic nationalism and protectionism, as well as economic trade warfare tactics employed by the US, were a major cause of uncertainty and weakness in the global economy. And also there was a general slowdown of global economic output, lagging and decreasing global trade and FDI activity, and also uncertainty about the future direction of this development have brought some analysts to replace the term globalization with globalization. And as I continue, the key themes from the international environment, one is that the major positive development in the period was the operationalization of the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement, which was the opportunity to enhance Pan-African relations and the reputation of the nation brand. Also illustrating the strategic linkages between the South African and Pan-African economy in South Africa, ranking fifth largest source of FDI in the continent. And also South Africa's reputation was enhanced through strategic engagement, a combination of state and working visits and participation in multilateral engagements. The core mandate, managing the nation brand, the core mandate of the organization is effected through the goals and organization units below. This is part of our APP at a high level. One, it is to enhance understanding of the nation brand performance, improve nation brand reputation and peace and perception among South Africans, improve national brand reputation domestically and international, enhance awareness of the nation brand identity, image, competitiveness and value proposition, a cohesive approach when promoting and marketing the national brand among stakeholders, strengthening national brand advocacy domestically and among South Africans living abroad, and lastly, enhance relations in private sector, academia, civil society, and institutions. And we do this in the center of the work that we do is research. The work is informed by research so that we are able to know what is it that we have to do in terms of time, in terms of the need, and also in terms of where the impact is going to be. And we deliver that through communication, marketing, stakeholder relations, and also global markets. Our highlights for the organization, Chairperson, I'm pleased to report that Brand South Africa, we achieved, like the Chairperson has said, the Chairperson of the Board, Ms. Tandi Tobias, that we achieved 83% of our performance target, difficult as it was. And also the awareness level of Brand South Africa is a further proof of the impact of our work, because this brand, once it is recognized and it is known, we see in the terms of it, in the issue of the percentages, with levels peaking in 49% in 2019, this from a baseline of 15% in 2014, 2015, improving steadily over the years to 38% in 2017 and 39% in 2018. And also the awareness of our country logo and positioning. You see that we know that the inspiring at its peak levels with 61% in 2019. On research, what we have seen for the year that I'm reporting on, what has been the reputation challenges, the issue of xenophobia and gender-based violence, a as a major challenge to the nation brand, and also the. And in addition to these challenges, the crime, corruption, and service delivery also affected the nation brand, as you see there where it is circled in terms of priority. It was 18% for women and child abuse, level of crime, government corruption, xenophobia, and service delivery. These were the main factors that affected this particular brand for the year that I'm reporting on. And what has boosted us was the issue with the strength, the reputation strength, was the education, sport, health care, most likely driven by the NHI, and collectively they both contributed almost 49% of the positive sentiment. But also something else that came up very strongly to boost the nation brand, in addition, was the NFSA, as well as us and entertainment, have a decisive positive influence on citizen perception. The performance of the nation brand, domestic perception as a country, is vital that we monitor how South Africans see themselves, because most of the time we likely to say, how does the world see us? But it's also important, how do South Africans see themselves, to have pride in this particular brand, patriotism. So domestic perception research identified trust as a major factor that drives and influences the reputation of the nation brand domestically. Because without trust, we are not going anywhere. If the people do not trust what the government is doing, if people do not trust what is happening and what exactly is the aim, it becomes a problem. So what did we do? We then further, in our study, we added the issue of trust. We introduced it into the monthly surveys, and this aspect was also included in the National Omnibus Survey. And the indicators emanating from this research were used to create the context for the current domestic environment for both the last quarter of the year as a marker of the financial year as a whole. The domestic perception research, again, the national pride construct has declined over the last 3 years. The national pride, your sports and individual achievement played important role in maintaining the national pride. That said, it is not ideal to develop a sense of national pride only on sport, and that other aspects decline in salience as it creates vulnerability. As we can see, 2017 on this one, we were at 75%, and 2019 we declined to 68%. On social cohesion, when people interact with one another on issues that have collective positive influence on the country, they tend to be more inclusive, more accepting, and more accommodating. However, should people interact in difficult circumstances, there is a greater chance of animosity and strife. So we can see there that for social cohesion, we were at 72% in 2017. We declined in 2018 and picked up a bit in 2019. Global competitiveness, this one I will not dwell much into details because we have prepared a special presentation. We were requested last year by the portfolio committee to come and make a presentation on research, where we are going to be able to take each and everyone and be able to give this particular presentation. We are still waiting for that chance, but this is just an overview of all the indices that we were monitored during the year that I am reporting on. And it's very interesting, if we go deeper, and if Dr. P, responsible for research, our GM research, can come and make a presentation so that we can see how we as the country, we fare on all these aspects. And the global competitiveness, overall, South Africa improved from 67 out of 140 countries in 2018 to 60. In 2019, institutions pillar improved from 69 to 55, important due to reputation damage in area of governance in recent years. And also on health, we moved from 125 to 118. And South Africa, we also ranked number one. And it is important on the issues of governance. But this, the reason for that, it is because of such issues like I have spoken about, your issues of these issues of the state capture that I just spoke about, to say the issues of transparency, our budget system, how we deal with the issues of budget, it's very transparent. Everyone knows how does South Africa go about in terms of budgeting. It's not a process that is hidden somewhere. So all these things, they boost on how transparent South Africa is. So these things, we should not look at them as something necessarily negative when they happen, because it shows the whole world that we are a transparent country and it is a positive for us. Let's put it, Dr. James. The Good Country Index as well, also is that South Africa, we ranked 47 out of 153 nation overall. And we ranked 3 of 53 countries in international peace and security, which is good. That's why we even bolded it. Number 3 is a good number out of 153. And also 18 for science and technology, we are doing very well. And we think we are still going to do very well now that we also have a dedicated department of digital technologies. Working together with science and technologies in dealing with issues of your R&D and research, maybe we will be maybe 10 out of 153 as we report next time. Also 31 out of for our contribution to the world order. Okay. On marketing, our highlights and key programs, the key organizational programs implemented during the year was the issue of the Nation Brand Forum. And I will elaborate the Play Your Part, Global South Africans, the Constitutional Awareness Program, the Comprehensive Stakeholder Relations Program. And also on industry recognition, for we won an award, a silver at the 2019 Lurie's Award. On Play Your Part, this Play Your Part is a national movement to inspire, empower, and celebrate active citizenship. And I've spoken a lot even previously about Play Your Part. We encourage normal citizens to be able to play their part in assisting different communities and in different sectors. And we launched a series of masterclass classes which were themed Play Your Part and Turn Your Ideas into Currency. And we've been going to schools and making sure that we encourage the young ones. The reach of this, it was 20 schools backed by national radio and digital campaigns. Radio, we reach over 10 million listeners. And also on we get all this information on base media. And also on digital, we reach over 6 million people. And we engage 63 ambassadors. We've got ambassadors, which we call Play Your Part ambassadors. We engage 63 of them. On constitutional awareness, this is where we promote constitutional values, broaden knowledge, foster values, and leverage them to encourage active citizenship. Even here, we go to schools. We make sure that it's important for South Africans, even in schools, for them to be able, the learners to understand the constitution. So we have been, even now, we are continuing to do that. And some of our board members, we go with them in this particular area. The recent one was done in the Nkomazi area where we went with Mr. Jack Modibane, where we are creating awareness of this South African constitution. And we had acting for the year that I'm reporting on, we had 13 activations which were hosted nationally, supported by the hashtag inspired by my constitution marketing campaign. And the main aim was to inspire the young people by showcasing everyday manifestation of the Constitution of South Africa through a series of web films featuring celebrity social influencers such as Hulisane Ravele and Nina Husky. And also 17 marketing platforms were leveraged, and also combined with this work that we did on constitutional awareness for the year that I'm reporting on was in the excess of 5 million people. And on global South African program, what is the aim of this program is to strengthen relations and nation brand advocacy among South Africans living abroad. These South Africans that are living abroad, although we did not appoint them formally to be our ambassadors, Play Your Part ambassadors, but they are our ambassadors. So we look after them. We go there, we see what they do, and then we tell them the story, the positive story of South Africa, because they are able to then narrate the same story to the people of those different countries. They are assisting us without us paying them. They are assisting us. So we went last, we went with, we went to the US, we went to the UK, we went to Australia, China, France, Qatar, and Germany. These are the areas. And when we get there, it is not just a trip, because when you get there, you get difficult questions. Everything that's happening in South Africa, when they at the session, they ask the questions. They want to know, why is this happening in South Africa? And we need to go there prepared to be able to sell the country. So to sell a country is not as easy as just, it's very difficult, because you need to know and understand the country that you are selling, and you need to have the answers for everything. When they talk about corruption in the procurement of PPEs, you need to be able to have a stance and be able to explain about the transparency of the process and the work that is being done to deal with those issues decisively. And they were happy when we brought Thandeka there, who sang for them, and also she shared the South African story. And we were reminding them how home is, so that they can remember South Africa and be able to assist us by delivering the positive message. And the GSA newsletter and SA Good News website shared messages and profiles the GSA activation. There we had a reach of about 180 countries, mostly in the SA diaspora, and also 11,000 email subscribers. And also 35,000 unique users and 50,000 Facebook followers that we got. The highlights again, Brand South Africa, we ran two main campaigns, which were themed Prepare, Protect, Prosper, Triple P, and also the 21 Day of Solidarity. These two campaigns were aimed at educating and informing South African citizens in rural and urban areas on COVID-19. And how did we do that? We did this work by, we made sure that we leveraged the messaging. We made sure that the message by the Department of Health, the message from the Command Council on COVID-19, we are able to disseminate the message and make sure that we reach the areas in all the languages where people do not normally access this type of information. And the award-winning Africa Day campaign was aimed at rallying all Africans to endorse a culture of social inclusivity and advocate a better Africa for all to prosper under the hashtag One Africa, One People. Promoting the nation brand domestically and internationally, also the marketing campaign, we had this particular campaign which was named Enough is Enough, Act Against Abuse. Brand South Africa leveraged various national brand enablers, the key to address the nation brand enablers, such as the GBV and attacks on foreign nationals, because if these things we don't decisively deal with them, that's why we call them the nation brand disablers, because if South Africa is ranked to be tops on issues of your deep GBV and issues of your xenophobia, it's not doing the country any good. The president can go all over and now trying to get investors to come and invest into the country, and people will say, why must we come and invest in this country where there is this high level of GBV and also the attacks on foreign nationals? So we were doing this particular campaign to make sure that we create awareness, but we also are able to address these particular issues. On spot, we partnership with the nation brand, Flag Bearer campaign leveraged the AFCON 2019 in Egypt to market and project a positive image of South Africa. Also, the netball Banyana Banyana and Bafana Bafana standoff were involved and promoted the play your part messages, encouraging South Africans to support the Springboks. And we all seen what the Springboks did when they won. They united the country. And also when we were talking about this going to schools, we are trying to inspire those in schools to say, I myself, I can also do it. I can be in Kunu, I can be wherever, in any deep rural area, but I can also do it. We were also there was engagement in collaboration with Josie Katz and the Japan. We also developed creative and messages in support of the Springbok send-off and welcome messages during and after. Because we are interested in the youth as well, showing them by showing this particular support, we are encouraging them. They also want to do better. That's why when you see us welcoming, whether it's Miss South Africa, we're there also with the chairperson, it's also just to show them that I myself can do it and I can be supported, to show them that we do reward good behavior. On investment, the successful CEO No campaign was promoted on Brand South Africa owned YouTube channel. And this particular campaign is a campaign that we are all familiar with, because every time we come to Parliament, we talk about it, that we get the CEOs that have invested in South Africa to share their reasons for investing in South Africa. By so doing, they are also encouraging those that have doubts to say to also come and invest in South Africa, because there are opportunities, and we deal with also the issue of ease of doing business in South Africa. Why is it easy? And we also work with your Home Affairs, with all the likes, to make sure that it is not difficult. There are no stringent measures and requirements for people to be able to come and access the country and be able to invest in South Africa. We also leverage West Africa, the South African Investment Conference, and West Davos meeting to promote the nation brand through several marketing and activation elements. And also the brand visibility was developed for overall brand strategy used to strongly position the country at the 2019 South African Investment Conference. The nation brand promotion, I'm talking about the Africa Month. This is the award-winning digital campaign, hashtag One Africa, One People, aimed at rallying all Africans to endorse a culture of social inclusivity and advocate a better Africa for all to prosper. And the Nation Brand Forum that I spoke about earlier, we hosted the fourth installment of the NBF targeting business, public sector, and creative arts sector. And the theme was reviving South African Nation Brand identity, and the minister was the key, gave a keynote address. And the Nation Brand Forum is very important, because this is where we bring about the issue of the awareness of the nation brand, working closely with our stakeholders, your business, also the public sector, and we engage on issues of the nation brand that they need to understand what is this nation brand about. So this is one of our prestigious events that when we host, we pride ourselves to say we own it, we all have the right of owning it, and this is where we're able to articulate our objectives. Okay, next. The marketing and advertising industry engagement we hosted the Marketing Resonance Award. The award recognized the SAB Invest and the brand that has managed to tap into truly South African insights. Also, we collaborated with the Luri Awards to strengthen and deepen Brand South Africa's visibility in the creative industry. We hosted the masterclass at the Luri's under the theme Tell Better South African Stories. The Nation Brand Promotion, again, the Miss Universe Homecoming that I spoke about, we supported the series of the homecoming activities through the content, because if you check from our research, you will see that the winning, or the Miss South Africa winning, it really assisted us as a brand to put us up there on the map. And the outpouring of support for Miss Universe showed us the great potential of international events such as beauty pageants and sports tournaments in uniting us as the people. The Nation Brand Promotion, other campaigns that we had the 2019 Sunday Times Generation Next Youth Engagement welcome messages in support of the presidential inauguration at the OR Tambo International and Domestic Terminals, and also the Voting and Freedom Month campaign that we ran. If we remember on the last bullet, that stamp that we had the picture on the stamp. The next one. The highlights on stakeholder. Over 50 collaborative activities were implemented in partnership with the private sector, civil society, and state institutions, stakeholders domestically, and also 22 activities were carried out in strategic international markets, including our country offices in the UK, US, and China. The stakeholder partnership domestically, we collaborated with IQ Business to deliver the Fly Your Flag activation at Tabisang Primary School in Soweto and in Johannesburg. We engaged over 150 learners from grade 4 to grade 7 of the significance of South Africa's national symbols. And also we collaborated with the Thabo Mbeki Foundation at the Freedom Park and the Fort Trekker Monument to host the Youth Month activation. More than 70 young people across the diverse communities attended, as you see there in the picture, for former President Thabo Mbeki at the Youth Month activity. We also, on stakeholder partnership, we collaborated with the Thabo Mbeki Foundation to host two events, the Tambo Annual Lecture and the Oliver and Adelaide Tambo 6th Annual Lecture. And the objective of this lecture for the 2019 lecture was to create a conversation around social and cultural activism. We also collaborated with the National Heritage Council of South Africa, the Department of Basic Education, South African National Parks, the National Arts Council, the National Film and Video Foundation, and the South African Heritage Resources Agency to host a 5-day heritage school outreach. When we dealt with the annual Tambo lecture, we also hosted the Congresswoman Maxine Waters at the OR Tambo lecture, and the Deputy Minister led this activation, Ms. Tembi Sweya. On the Stakeholder Partnership International, we provided support to Team South Africa, participation at the 74th UNGA and Minister Mthembu address at the African Exchange hosted by the Society for the Africa in the Diaspora. And also we participated at the round table on the African narrative. And we were also responsible for media engagement that we arranged for the minister, providing South Africa as a competitive destination for investment, tourism, and source of goods and services. We also partnered with the top magazine called to host Top Lounge. And this is a networking and marketing platform that brings together senior executives from Greater Colon area. This was held at the historic venue that once hosted President Mandela as a ambassador to Germany. His Excellency Cezanne gave a keynote address. Also, Brand South Africa, we provided the marketing and communication support for the president when the president went to give a keynote address at the Financial Times Africa Summit that was hosted under the theme Africa in Motion. So we were there, and everything that was done around this, the communication and marketing, we did that particular support. We actually, our UK-based person, Pumela, in the UK, did the briefing for the president, because the president needed to be briefed about the UK before, so that by the time he gives the address, at least there is some alignment. The stakeholder outreach strategic platform, the BRICS Summit 2019, we collaborated with the SA Embassy in Brazil to host the BRICS outreach engagement hosted by the president, and also the G20 Summit in 2019, the one that took place in Japan. We also hosted a site event with all the business people. We collaborated with the president, the DTI, DECO, and JCIS. The stakeholder outreach, also the 28th World Economic Forum on Africa, Cape Town, September 2019. The theme of that was shaping inclusive growth and shared future in the fourth industrial revolution. We had an active role there that we played as Brand South Africa, and our role was we collaborated with National Treasury, DTI, JCIS, and Westgro to implement integrated stakeholder marketing. This was done specifically or mainly to actively position the nation brand. We also utilized the partnership with the Euronews to share content which reached more than 400 million homes across 160 countries. The key output, what we got out of this, was West Africa Focus Report translated into 11 languages. And also the total reach was 3.8 million people and 1.1 million investors that we were able to get out of this particular event. 7th Tokyo International Conference on African Development, Brand South Africa published a special feature in the Japan Times to market the country as an investment destination, and the reach was over 100,000 readers in print and approximately 9 million online page viewers. The China International Expo in Shanghai, this was a partnership with Embassy in Beijing, Consulate General in Shanghai, and the DTI on series of activities. It was the ribbon cutting ceremony, which was led by our Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry, Ms. Skinner, and the Consulate General in Shanghai, Ms. Lassa, to open the South African pavilion. And also there was a press conference addressed by the DM, which covered 15 China-based media outlets. and the expo has attracted more than 3,000 enterprises. The South African Investment Conference 2019, there is another one that is happening now that is underway. We supported the second Africa Investment Conference in November 2019, a platform that highlights new investment opportunities in the country, attracted approximately $290 billion in investment, and Brand South Africa played an integral part in the execution of the program, like we are doing even now, leading media relations, digital strategy, and audiovisual content of development. All supported by IDC in ensuring the branding framework from the conference was aligned to the country brand and positioning. And this particular event received extensive media coverage. The highlights under communication is that the nation brand, we showcase our strength and domestically and internationally. We published a total of 100 positive communication content pieces in the year under review. And media engagement were another critical tool to position and drive a position narrative for the nation brand, with activities implemented during the year generating the coverage aid exceeding 30 million. The reputation management, the corona outbreak required us to work in a different way. It required the creation of unprecedented crisis communication strategy by all, not only Brand South Africa, but we needed to be on top of our game for the benefit of South African citizens and their access to reliable information. Like I have said, we access all the radio stations in all the different languages to make sure that people do get the information that they need. Actually, when we communicate, we don't just come up with our own messaging. We make sure that we get we align with the messages from the main department that is communicating on that particular subject at that particular time, to make sure that we spread, because we have the know-how, we have the resources, we are able to then assist that the message must get to each and every person. So in this case, we're working closely with also the Department of Health through the Command Council, specifically the communication one. So we were able to communicate and reach South Africans. And Brand South Africa, we implemented multiple proactive, reactive, and coordinated marketing communication interventions. And the two main campaigns I spoke about, the Prepare Protect and the 21 Days of Solidarity, were aimed at educating and informing South Africans in rural and urban areas on COVID-19 so as to avoid the spreading of the virus. And it's easy when people hear this thing in their own languages. So we were actually doing that to make sure that the message is elevated and it gets to the people that are supposed to get it. On digital communication, rise due to increase in content dissemination on social media, focus on themes that resonate with the audiences, and paid media campaign to boost the content reach. And the overall sports and ultra-cult content is popular, like I said when I started, and the content pieces of South African flying the flag high performed very well. Video production continue to be effective tool in driving the online engagement. And on media engagement, we had 11 strategic media engagement activities. Also, we did the coverage of AV in excess of 30 million, like I said, and also the platforms such as the Nation Brand Forum and South African Investment Conference were also leveraged to positively position the Nation Brand. The sixth administration international engagement kicked off with the President Ramaphosa confirmed as the AU chair, formally commencing in January 2020. And we are also part of driving the communication in this regard. We're working very closely with the presidency in making sure that we communicate. And you might have seen some of the communication that has went out and some of the things we are going to report in the year that we are currently busy with. And the President participation in Russia, Africa Economic Forum in Russia on 23 to 24 October 2019. Also, President's state visit to the United Republic of Tanzania. The President led the delegation to the G7 summit, France, and also the President undertook to work his working visit in Gabon. And in 2018 BRICS compliance report, it is indicated that in the year following South Africa's hosting of the 10th summit, the overall compliance score comes to a historical high of 85%. On corporate services, the vacancy rate and turnover rate per category. The overall staff vacancy rate in Brand South Africa is currently standing at 19.3%, and the vacancy rate is above the 10% threshold. Increase in the vacancy rate is due to a combination of factors such as resignation and dismissals, and also the overall staff turnover rate is 8.42%, and the turnover rate is inclusive of 3 resignations and 1 dismissal. The Exco staff turnover rate is 25%. This is due to 1 Exco member dismissal. There were no resignations from the critical workforce position, and Brand South Africa has 8 positions which are deemed as a critical workforce. So there were no resignations there. On information technology, we achieved 98.34% availability of all the critical IT services and application, and this achievement was attributed to having planned support and scheduled maintenance of the IT infrastructure. And the annual target that we have set for ourselves for 1920 was 98%, which we then reached and exceeded it. On strategic planning, Brand South Africa Board of Trustees subscribe fully to government-wide monitoring and evaluation system, and Brand South Africa is therefore compliant in ensuring that the strategic planning performance information reporting is considered critical. And Brand South Africa submitted the quarterly and financial and non-financial performance of 2019 to the EA and to the Oversight Board, including National Treasury and Planning and Evaluation and Parliament, as well as for the to the AEJ. So we were compliant. We're not found wanting.
Ms. Manzini, can you wrap up? Remember, we have a sitting at 2, and we need to log in as early as possible.
No problem. I'm moving faster. And on corporate governance, we are a 3A public entity registered as a trust, and our board has already transitioned from King 3 to King 4. With the outcome of ethical culture, good performance, effective control, and legitimacy. Let's move. And on finance, on a high level, the creditor's balance in 2020 financial grew significantly from 24.3 million to 16.2 million. And furthermore, our cash reserves cover creditors with 64.3%, indicating good financial health. If you look at that graph, it shows that the income statement further indicates an improvement from a deficit of 18.1 million in the previous financial year to 4.1 million in 2020 financial year. In summary, the AFS reflects that Brand South Africa is financially viable and financial position has significantly improved from the previous financial year. The next one. On the audit opinion, last year when we presented, we were qualified. So this year we have moved from qualified to unqualified opinion, like the AG presented with other matters. And those other matters, the AG has reported on are matters that we have started looking at, like Mr. Jama from the AG, who presented responsible for our account, said that as management, we are looking into those matters to make sure that we move from, because we are moving steadily, qualified, unqualified, we are actually gunning for clean. We were actually gunning for clean, but along the way, like a child, you know, we are still getting there. We are crawling, but we will be walking. Matters affecting the audit report related to the irregular expenditure, which are the matters that we discussed at length with the AG in terms of matters of interpretation. And these are the matters that we will be going back to look very closely at and make sure that we put an action plan in place to deal with these matters decisively. And issues of consequence management, when we come back, we will be able to present exactly to say what is it that we have done. And I'm pleased to also say that on performance information program 2, we were also unqualified. And the challenges, the targets that we did not meet, it is the SA incorporate, we are moving too fast. Number of, go back please. number of satisfactory reports on monitoring. AXA noted significant internal control deficiencies during their performance of the external audit. The department is implementing measures to address the control weaknesses during the second quarter of the financial year, like I've said, and also the percentage varies on approved budget versus the actual expenditure. This was attributed to the audit billing, which was behind budget. So this was not our own making. The delay in the audit delayed us and made us not to achieve this one. The percentage overall organizational performance rating, 80% overall, and we were able to, the 80% overall organizational performance rating. Please, next one. Target not met. The incorporated research analysis, this was due to the issue of the COVID-19. This was cancelled. The nation brand alignment training workshop, also due to COVID-19, we couldn't do it. And also the stakeholder-led platform, the stakeholder in Gauteng could not be delivered due to restrictive measures that we put in place due to COVID-19. The annual target of 17 GSA is the same story. Coordinated activities implemented in partnership with private sector with the Mango Airlines could not be delivered due to the restrictive measures that we were put in place. Challenges continued. There was no board of trustees from June 2019 until November 2019, and as part of the reconfigure, and that on its own created problems, because there were certain things that were supposed to be approved and they were not approved because we needed to have a board in place, because the trustee is very clear. And also the issue of the reconfiguration process, I will not dwell much into that because of time, and also of the moratorium at that particular time that was placed in July 2019. It was uplifted by Minister in July 2019. And also much effort went into the discussion with GCIS into the possible merger, which did not happen. At some stage, we were told that we will measure with GCIS. We put a lot of effort there. That did not happen. Brand South Africa experienced challenges to fill vacant posts and recruit in terms of the employment equity. The AG is fully aware of our challenges because we had meetings with them, and we were able to, but although we had these challenges, I'm glad to say that every request for information that was asked by the AG, we have a 3-day turnaround time. We have not asked for extension, not even once. Everything that was 3 days, we were supposed to report either the 3 days or earlier. So we tried even with all those challenges. We commenced with the process of reviewing the structure, but we had to stop due to COVID-19 at the time going out on tender, because National Treasury was very clear on the restrictions on what needs to go out in terms of emergency. But now there's something else. The current reconfiguration process involving SAT, InvestSA and Brand South Africa is one of the issues that we are currently dealing with, which is bringing a lot of uncertainties in the organization. And also the negative publicity relating to Brand South Africa featured in the media, which was unfortunate. And based on this last bullet, when AG came to audit us, they told us that we are a high-risk organization. And rightfully so, because of all the things that were there in the media about us. So they came to us already with that type of, that this organization, they needed to look into the organization. And they even brought another branch of theirs that they had to seriously look in certain areas. But before I close, I also want to say that some of the issues that came up from the AG, Mr. Chama is here, are issues that come from prior years. Like the issue of the SAP that you were talking about is issues of 2-3 years ago, because they were saying we are a high risk organization. They then looked into other issues that were not necessarily this specific year. So we had to deal with all those particular issues. Hence, it also took time for us to finalize. So, but those are the issues that we are addressing, and we are not saying that because these issues happened 3 years ago, even before most of us, our time, we are not addressing them. We are addressing them, but I just wanted to put context into it, because somebody who's just listening to a brief or a presentation to say the matter that was supposed to be reported to SAPS, it was not reported. I just want to say that those are the issues that come from years ago, but that we will be attending to. And when we come back, we will specifically say we went to SAPS, and so-and-so is arrested, if they want to arrest it, but we'll come with a case number. And please, let's move. We were asked last time to talk quickly on this issue, the disciplinary process of the CFO, just to say that the matter is before the Labour Court after the CCMA decision is being reviewed, and the issue of our office space that we are working closely with the Department of Public Works and GCIS, engaging with Growpoint, our landlord, to evaluate the building we are currently occupying so that we can have a proper space. Thank you.
I see these honorable members who want to speak. It's Honorable Ntuli, Honorable Mutsipe, Honorable Lesoma. I see Tandi's iPad. Who is that?
It's the chairperson of the board, Ms. Tandi Tobias, our chairperson. I'm speaking on her behalf because of her voice.
Oh, this is the question time. I won't allow you to put questions. You must answer questions that are asked. So let me once again note this following members. It's Honorable Ntuli, Honorable Mutsipe, Honorable Lesoma, Honorable Malatsi, and Honorable Gibby, in that order. Honorable Ntuli, come in.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, we welcome the two presentations from Stats SA and Brand SA. I would love to seek some clarities from Stats SA. One, COVID-19 is said to be haunting the globe wire. Have you devised any strategy for field workers operating under risk-free conditions during data collection? Two, Stats SA is understaffed, but incurred over expenditure through employee compensation. How do you view this for future budgeting? Three, working understaffed as it is, what are the implications so far? Are you going to be able to keep a top quality work as usual? The understaffed of Stats SA paralleled with the under budget is sort of worrisome, and this portfolio committee now is like a scratch record on this matter. We've attempted as this portfolio committee, I remember very well that
you are breaking up now. The network is not on your side, Honorable Julie.
Delegated the chamber, but it seems all the education work. Chair.
Continue, Honorable Tuli.
Yes, I was on the issue of the understaffed and the under budget as well, to say this is very worrisome, and this committee has attempted many times, even delegated the chairperson to take the matter further. And it is clear that if this is not taken care of, this is going to jeopardize the work for Stats SA. In
his presentation, the SG, he also mentioned that there is no indication for budget cuts for now, but I feel strongly that maybe this committee invite the treasurer now. Maybe the treasury invite the treasury together with the minister, and also SSA to come and present before the portfolio committee, treasury and the minister, so that we discuss the matter once and for all. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mtsipe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. To SSA, is the issue of filling of posts been adhered to since it was a problem from 2016? We heard on the report that there is a certain percentage that was done. So this filling of post was filled to your satisfactory. Number two, do you have a plan to ensure that 50% representation of women in senior management positions? If yes, what is the plan? The third one, what are the risks associated in staff overstressed with additional responsibility on the quality and reliability of any work of staff SA? And then coming to Brand SA, how far is the process of finalizing the report of the suspended CEO, and when would this post advertise? Number two, what was the cause of this dismissing ESCO member? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Lusoma.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me say it up front quickly to say that I would be happy if I can get my response in writing, but for record purposes, I'll raise them. There are four. One on directed to SSA, transparency and regular compliance checks with regulation are a significant process in preventing maladministration that lead up to corruption. If not properly adhered to, they affect the integrity and ethics of the government negatively. The AG report raised concerns about Brand SA with regards to the sound financial performance management. Capability is one of the priorities of government because we want a government that is effective and accountable to its citizens. Drawing from the AG's report, what new measures has the entity adopted to strengthen risk compliance specifically? The compliance, their monitoring strategy, and record keeping. This would also apply in the, for SSA, this one, Chair. Secondly, now to the SSA, reference to the collection of data that would contribute to statistics and the entity not being able to collect data within the remote areas, such as rural areas and the deep rural ones. Will that not have an impact in the credibility of the stats that has been collected thus far? I know the AG did attempt to respond to this question, but not up to my satisfaction. That's why I'm sounding like I'm repeating myself. Thirdly, Chair, the issue of risk issue that we raised previously as the committee is the issue of filling of vacancy or finalization of the CEO and CFO position. We would like to have a roadmap or the milestone when it's going to be concluded and finalized. The second last one, Chairperson, is that, which also this one, my apologies, I should have raised it to be, it's within the Brand SA, is the issue of the risk and the nation brand or negative impact. The issue, which is topical now, I'm sure you have, this one is a take-home issue. The Bashir versus the South Africa issues and also our security capacity and related matters. That one would love to hear Brand SA, how would you then sell the brand if there are such issues happening? And I know that Home Affairs is dealing with the matter. The very last one, Chair, that I would like to raise, you'll forgive me on this one, I've got to, because I don't want any member or anyone feel that I was abusing you or because I'm a female or you're abusing me. But I will still continue raising the issue, Chair, but We must rest assured. I don't want to be the chair. Somebody appoints people to be the chair. I will ever respect you as the chair. And my apology if I sounded like I wanted to chair the meeting. Thank you very much.
Honorable Malazi.
Questions on this one. One is linked to Brand SA, and it's linked partially to the question that Honorable Lesoma made earlier. Just a status report with regards to the investigations that was being done into the former CEO or the suspended CEO, and also the plan to just finalize that matter so that we can move towards having a permanent CEO. And to Stats SA, I mean, you know, one of my colleagues earlier raised on that, I think the challenges with regards to underfunding and the capacity constraints to repeat, you know, and that is something that I think we have both from, you know, the other side and even us as committee members, we have grown increasingly frustrated with the lack of a breakthrough that will basically get to the stage where Stats SA can no longer bemoan the reality that it doesn't have the resources it needs to function as optimally as it would want to do. So I want to understand, because I think in the last meeting there was a reference made to the fact that some of the work or some of the Stats SA's key reports have had to be compromised or not, you know, conducted for the current financial year for the purposes of, you know, simply because there's just no capacity to do that. If we can get an indicator of those studies that were not conducted due to, you know, the current capacity constraints that SA faces, but also in terms of then the way forward for the next financial year, is the projection that given, you know, the current funding model, given the current capacity constraint and the anticipation that the situation might not substantially change by the end of the fourth quarter, that the status quo would remain? And then what becomes then, you know, the solution, particularly given the usefulness of such key evidence-based research that some of those reports are being used to? Because I think it will be the loss of monumental information that is very useful and pivotal for the state, the private sector, and even NGOs in conducting their work. And just lastly, Chair, and this is just for housekeeping purposes, I think there was a commitment earlier on from your side, Chair, to expedite that engagement with the Finance Ministry about the funding model. So if at the end, perhaps you can share the status quo on your side with regard to that, so that we'll be able to reconcile the response from the Statistician General and yours with regards to the funding concerns going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Malazi. Honorable members, I see the time is running out and we have a sitting at 2. Can I suggest that all the questions be responded to in writing and that be sent to the committee secretary, because we have to quickly log into the house meeting now. Am I getting approval from members?
Thumbs up, Chair.
I'm Chairperson.
Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Malazi. I will respond to this outside the platform. Can we now adjourn the meeting so that we quickly log into the house meeting, which starts at 2:00? Thank you very much to all of you, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. The meeting is now adjourned.